David. What's your favorite scary movie?
And that was pretty good, actually. If I'm being honest, it's probably The Thing. But Scream is pretty close up there. It's I just lost my train of words. I was going to say it's also the thing we're here to talk about, but I fucked that up. Fix it. Help with my fixing.
I can't fix you.
No.
Every time I hear the Ghostface voice, I just think of Jigsaw now.
You want to play a game?
It's yeah, funny because
I was thinking of that as I rewatched. I mean, I've seen Scream the number of times that you can't count.
I can't besides even count.
The fact that I racked up to, yeah. Well, I knew that already.
Yeah.
But I mean, besides the two viewings that I racked up just to prime myself for this. But when he says, like, we should play a game, I was like, oh my God. I thought I was quoting Saw.
Yeah. And then you think, oh, wait.
Yes. This that's obviously not how this works. Predates Saw. But yeah. So Scream, 1996.
It really doesn't even need an introduction in my book. We can give one.
Yeah, I feel like for those of us that don't have the book, you know, we need to give them a brief intro. But yeah, Scream, 1996 horror film, directed by Wes Craven, written by Kevin Williamson, and it's got a pretty star-studded cast, which apparently I didn't realize was a pretty big deal. Like, I just thought, okay, but to be fair, when this came out, it was 8. So, but I probably saw it when I was 9.
I was 3.
Oh, you baby.
I definitely did not see this super early on. I remember the poster hanging in my brother's bedroom. My brother worked at a movie theater. So I want to say it was Scream 1, but it may have been Scream 2 that he had hanging up behind his door. And then later on, he had a Hannibal poster, which, like, having the movie posters in the house is like awesome. Prime memory, yeah. You know, but I will say Scary Movie was a movie we had at my house growing up because, again, my brother, much older than I.
The spoof and, satire of this.
Yes.
Movie.
This movie.
With the original title.
Mm-hmm. And this movie, and it has a lot of, like, I Know What You Did Last Summer. But when I watch this movie, sometimes I am caught off guard, like, oh, this is actually in this movie and not in Scary Movie.
I definitely have seen Scream more than Scary Movie. As I mean,
definitely. But there's a few scenes that I'm just like, this is silly.
In Scream or
in Scream?
Like, okay. But we haven't started what
I know, but I just wanted to get this out here.
I know, but now I'm curious. Name one. You don't have to tell me why. When we get to it, you'll explain why.
All of Henry Winkler.
Okay. Which I think
the Wes Craven cameo.
There's a very specific reason. I'm just going to call him the Fonz.
Yeah.
or in here, he's Principal
Hembley or something.
Hembley. Yeah. I have his name somewhere.
Yeah.
We'll get to it when his character's introduced. He's the principal. but there is, I believe, an actual, and I don't know specifically what for him, but some of the scenes with him, there's a very specific reason. It's Craven cameo. Is that moment two? Or is that including, because I mean that's got one of the Fonz.
That's moment 3.
Okay.
Well, like everything with the Fonz, every time he's on screen, I'm just like, get out of here.
I think of him also from Waterboy as
Coach Oh my Plan. Goodness.
And I'm just like, I can't hate you, man. Although, yeah, one of those scenes is very like, what the fuck, homie, with the scissors. Mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah. I think that would get you in trouble today. But
with the Drew Barrymore, when she's running, I just like in my head, see, it's Carmen Electra, isn't it?
Oh, okay. Yep.
When she's getting chased and then he stabs her in the boob and pulls out a silicone implant.
Yeah.
Whenever Drew Barrymore is about to get stabbed, like right in the chest, I always think he's going to get her in the boob. It's just, I can't separate it. But I've definitely seen this movie way more than Scary Movie. I can't even tell you the last time I watched the first Scary Movie.
There are a lot of them now.
It was probably like over 10 years ago.
I've seen it more recently than that.
So how did you watch this movie? DVD, streaming, Blu-ray?
Oh, I watched it streaming, actually. I own it. It was just, I realized it was on Amazon Prime.
Damn it. I watched it on like Pluto one time. Way too many ads. All of the ads were repeating. That was just because I didn't want to get up and watch it, like get my DVD.
Well, see, I was the same laziness, but I looked it up and saw it said Prime. I was like, no way. I was like, I would have seen it if it was on Prime. Because I mean, earlier in this month, there have been times when I lazily scroll through it and I'm like, that shit should come up. Nope, it was in there. I look, I'm like, you bastard, only for till the end of the year, which, you know, if you, this is the 21st recording. So it's gone next year. And I was like, how could they hide this from me? I was mildly upset.
I did the voice search from my remote. Said just like press the button, said Scream, scrolled down. The only option it gave me was like Pluto or something. And the funny thing was, when I was watching it, I was like doing other things the first time I watched it. And you know, you have the opening scene.
Yeah.
So opening scene happens. So Scream, you know, title card. And then the ad was like for a news network. And I was like, is this some weird cut I've never seen before? Because it said like today at the 12 o'clock hour, this happened. And it was like a news briefing of like someone getting kidnapped or something. And I was just like,
oh, it's like,
what is going on?
Scream 5.
And then
in the Scream.
And then it was over, and then another commercial played, and my boyfriend was like, I thought that was part of the movie. And I was like, you and me both, my guy. Like, it was just so funny the way that it worked out. And then there was this cowboy commercial that kept playing, and it was very annoying.
But about that title screen, it's one of the few things that I'm like, what? Yes, yeah, those of you that cannot see, she's thumbing down. Yeah,
big old thumbs down.
But hella cheesy. I said the cheese mainly stops there. I think there might be one or two other cheesy things, but for the most part, man, it's just like flash some letters and there's a phone ring and then have a woman scream.
Can we talk about the font? The Scream and even like the way that it looks reminds me of those anti-piracy.
Oh,
things.
Yeah, ads.
You wouldn't steal
a car.
Yes. That's
if
it.
I could.
Like, what do you mean?
It's a free car? Get my printer out.
Yeah, I think it just looks like that.
It did have that effect, like flashing lights. It was like red and blue. I could be totally...
I think so.
...fucking this up. It's for like a second. You get over it fairly quickly. And we get into the now infamous like opening sequence with Casey Becker, who's all over her house. You know, someone calls her and it's a wrong number, and it happens a few times, and they start having a conversation about like, you know, what's your favorite scary movie and all that jazz.
Do you think he knew that that would be so iconic?
I don't think so. Are you referring
Wes Craven?
I don't know. There's a few, I think, lines in this movie that I feel are iconic, but I'm also a total fanboy. Getting this out of the way, Scream is one of my not just scary movies, but it's just one of my favorite movies. I think it's a wonderful blend of comedy and horror. So I laugh and I still get the thrills, and it's witty. I just like it. But first, this was my first what the fuck thing. So Drew Barrymore's character, Casey Becker, mm-hmm. says that her favorite mm-hmm. movies, you know, it takes her a little bit to decide, but she says Halloween.
Safe bet.
Yeah, but then she's like, you know, the one with the guy in the white mask who walks around and stalks babysitters. It's like, you don't know his name, bitch? That's your favorite movie? Now, this comes up later because that ends up being her first, like, warm-up question. And I was like, I don't know. Is this me being a nitpicky little bitch? This has nothing to do with the overall quality of the movie.
Well, maybe she thought he wouldn't know. Maybe she thought he wouldn't know who that is.
Michael
so she's
Myers.
Like, yeah, you know, the guy, white mask.
Okay. Okay, I'm seeing things from new perspectives.
I'm not saying it's good.
I don't know. I was just like, I'd be like, you know, Michael Myers, white mask, whatever. I guess this is pish posh. And then there's a couple more lines in here, because as they have the conversation, he gets like the, he wants to know her name. Why? I want to know who I'm looking at. She's like, what? He's like, I want to know who I'm talking to.
That's not what you said.
Exactly. Yes. Perfect.
I sat way closer to my TV than I normally do.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was able to. So when she's talking to him and there's the patio door behind her, did you notice that you can totally see the outline of her boyfriend?
No. I wasn't looking. I think at least once I've tried to check, but I never caught a glimpse. That's awesome. So he was out there.
Oh my God. How long was he out there though?
Nah, I don't think too long. They probably had to set him up a little before. I don't know. Either way, there's a few times in this movie where I'm like, which one of them is that? Because, oh, spoilers.
I have a list. Baller. I have a list.
Good. Okay, we're going to get down to this. But, you know, I'm going to play this out as though, you know, I haven't seen this movie a bajillion times. And also as though the sequels don't exist. Because some things get retconned.
I don't know about the sequels. I do, but, like, I'm not paying attention to them right now.
You know, then someone rings the doorbell. She's getting freaked out because, obviously, it's getting more menacing. Who's there? Who's there? One of my favorite lines, though, is because she says she's going to call the cops. And the phone rings as she's going to do it. And it's the killer. And I love how meta. This is one of the things I mean, I hear meta tossed around a lot. But I think it's fair to use in this context because it's very self-aware with the tropes and cliches of horror movies. Because then the killer literally says, you should never say who's there. He's like, don't you watch scary movies? It's a death wish. You might as well just come out here to investigate a strange noise or something. And it was just funny that the guy's like, come on. So that's one of the reasons I enjoy this movie. And it keeps that tone throughout.
This is also the same universe that we're in. Like, we know the same movies. We know the same actors. I don't think that's something that's ever been done before.
It may have been, but it's not common. Or there's plenty of times in horror movies where they pretend, I don't know, maybe it's a copyright thing. Mm-hmm. Maybe they just don't want to have to, like, reference other works. But
yeah.
And how many zombie movies have you seen where it's not a zombie? They're like, what's going on? I'm like, I don't know, if I saw that, I'd be like, holy shit, there's fucking zombies. But everyone's like, what could be happening here? He's like, really? You've never seen a movie? Like, why can't you just acknowledge that, you know?
Quit living in denial.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it was just to keep that work separate.
Yeah.
In its own container. I don't know. There might be a good reason. Hey, if you know why there's a particular reason, tweet at us. Let us know. But yeah, that's one of the reasons, as I mentioned before, I like this. It mentions a lot of popular culture. So it makes you feel grounded. She threatens him with her boyfriend. Casey's all like, he's big and he's mean. He plays football. And he's going to kick your ass.
Is his name Steve?
Dun, dun, dun. Spoiler, his name is Steve.
And he's been there the whole time.
Tied up in a chair in the patio. And they're going to play a game. Do you remember the exact rules? I mean, I know what happens if she loses. I don't remember if they tell her what she wins. If she wins.
I don't. I think they may say something.
Well, either way.
But it's very obvious they're not going to play by her rules.
Yeah. Because the warm-up question was, who's the killer in Halloween? Which... it takes her, she doesn't remember, which is why I was almost calling bullshit. I'm like, because come on. But she does remember.
So I get you're scared, but let's get your shit together. All right?
Like, I can be scared. And I'm like, I still know fucking Michael Myers, Freddy Krueger, Jason Voorhees. Anyway. Oh, so he asked her about the Michael Myers. She gets that one right. But that's just the bonus question or the warm up. And the real question was about who was the killer in Friday the 13th. Jacqueline, do you know who the killer was in Friday the 13th?
I know it's not Jason Voorhees.
That's correct. So it was Jason Voorhees' mother.
Mm-hmm. But she's like, it's Jason. It's Jason. Everyone knows it's Jason. No, Jason doesn't come into the sequels.
Honestly, this is the reason. Because I watched Scream probably before I watched a lot of the Friday the 13th movies.
Yeah.
I think this is the main reason I will always know that in the original, it's not Jason. As because of this, that question, because that series is associated with Jason Voorhees, but you forget about Mrs. Voorhees and her head getting chopped off, rest in pieces. Not really. Like, he keeps her head as a shrine. It's weird.
So then there's that part where he says, hey, we're not finished yet. And do you think
did you mention that right because she got that wrong, what they did to Steve? I think that happens right after she's like, it's Jason. And he's like, wrong answer.
And then.
Because then they go to the bonus round. But that one, they slice poor Stevie open. It's pretty brutal.
It really is. And I don't think I really realized.
Neither did how I. Much
gets shown.
Yeah.
That part. And when later, when she's hanging, a lot's hanging out, let me tell you.
Yes, I never know. Okay, I've seen this movie so many times, but I guess.
She is very far away.
Yeah, but even that, so I paused it and I was taking notes. And I was like, oh my God, there's a lot more going on here than I normally pay attention to. I mean, I knew the gist of it. You see Steve in the chair and his intestines are now out-testines. I made that up, but I think someone did it first, but I didn't know it. But yeah, it's gnarly. And it gets more later. And then the true question, what door am I at? And then he ends up busting in and there's a scuffle. She's trying to escape.
Do you think it would have mattered which door she chose?
No.
Because do you think there was one of them at either door?
I've thought about that. I think it would have taken both of them to do what they do in the time that it happens.
Oh, yeah.
You never technically see more than one ghost face on screen at once.
Not a real one, no.
I like to think that they're not like to think. Like, you know, I like to think that there's a killer at every door. But no, they were not going to play by.
When I like to give advice, I just like to think that there's a killer at every door, you know? Yeah.
Makes sense.
That's it keeps you me up at night.
You check your corners. Every door is a threat. One of them tosses a chair through the back that window.
Do you want to know who is who?
Oh, you know who is who?
Yes.
Awesome.
So this is from the Scream Wiki, scream.fandom.com.
Yeah.
So definitely reliable.
Gimme.
Casey's phone calls are Billy Loomis, and this is confirmed by Kevin Williamson.
All right.
Steve's murder was Stu, confirmed by a writer. And then Casey's window attack is Billy.
So they were both there. Makes sense.
Casey's murder.
Stu? I'm going to guess Stu.
Yeah.
Okay. The only reason I guess Stu is because later there's things about Stu having dated her. And knowing what I know, it seems like he might kind of want to be the one to do that. And then she also technically pulls his mask off. We don't see it, but she reaches at the mask and pulls it up. The killer allows her to see his face before he finishes her off.
What a way to go.
As we just described, there's a quick scuffle. Her parents are coming home. She makes a run for it, but she doesn't make it.
Of course, the neighbors are too far away. She's running. Oh, God, when her body is like getting dragged. And she's holding the phone and just she's like,
yeah,
barely making noise. Her parents come into the house and they're like, what's going on here? Her Jiffy Pop. She never took it off the stove.
It's on fire.
So it's smoking. It's beeping. There's a lot going on. And then what does her dad say?
He tells the mom to call the police, doesn't he? Yeah, because she checks the phone. Oh, and then go over to the neighbors.
Go to the McKenzies.
What am I? Who's
in Halloween?
Oh, my God. Is that really what they say? Is that, a reference? Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know this reference a billion times. Okay. So
yeah.
You could just say there's an awesome Halloween reference. You don't have to put me on blast, Jeff.
There's another one in like a minute, too.
Loomis? If it's someone with Loomis. Well, maybe
no,
I'll get that
but
one.
Like that has to be
it could
his
be.
Last name is Loomis. We mentioned this. Well, I mentioned it in our older episode.
Okay, so she's supposed to run to the McKinsey's a la Halloween. That I'm with the cool kids and I know these things. But she grabs
when
the
she
phone.
Goes outside.
And well, first she grabs the phone.
Yeah, she grabs
and
the
hears
phone.
Because she goes to call the cops. And as you said, Casey's being dragged. We only see her being dragged. We don't see who's doing the dragging. But she's got the phone in her hand. And her gasps for breath. Her mom hears it. And she calls out to her. And then, when the phone goes dead, she goes outside. You want to talk about it?
Oh man, she's out there like a pinata that got hit too many times.
Hanging from a tree a few feet off the ground. Her insides are just so dangling. They're dangling all the way down to a pile on the ground, which I never noticed.
Yeah.
And everything's steaming still because in theory her insides would be warmer than the air. So it makes sense. And I never noticed the steam coming off of it until this rewatch when I paused it to write my notes. I was like, oh my God.
Insane.
And the way she's hung from that tree, like it would have taken a lot of effort considering we watch her get dragged. And then about 10 seconds later, she's, you know, somehow up in this tree. Damn, now I know exactly who did it. I'm glad I called the stew one though. So for anyone listening, if you aren't aware, we've already kind of given away part of it. There are two killers.
If you don't know, what are you doing?
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, no, you know what? You're okay, you person that hasn't watched Scream. But if you want to become a better, shush, Jacqueline, shush. But if you wish to become a better, more wholesome person, if you care about the people around you, go give Scream a watch. And it's just... Yes,
it's a learning experience.
It is.
It teaches you the rules
about how to survive a horror movie. And then it subverts them itself, which I love.
I forgot to mention, because I watched this for the second time on my Blu-ray, title screen, magnificent. It looked cute. And then when you scroll side to side through the different options, it gives a little like slashy noise in between. 10 out of 10. See, we're really missing out on menu screens in the streaming era.
I just did it because it was convenient. And yes, so you are correct. In my search for convenience, I missed a fantastic menu screen. I'm sorry at all of you artists and programmers who ever worked on the menu for Scream, the Blu-ray. We appreciate you.
I just feel like they're not doing it as much anymore. Like the new DVDs that I buy, they're not as fun.
Some of them have stuff, but really depends. So first of all, if I recall, because I saw this when I was young, but I was nine, so I wasn't super in the know. The fact that they killed off a big star.
Prime real estate on the poster.
She is the poster. Well, for some of them, she is the poster. It's her face.
Yes.
And other ones, she's not. But either way, Drew Barrymore, I mean, everyone around that time knew who Drew Barrymore was. You still probably know who Drew Barrymore is. She's still famous.
Yeah, now she's like a talk show host, Santa Clarita Diet.
But like 90s, like, you know, she's still peak. She's famous. She's big. She's been in movies since she was a wee child. Then they put her on the posters and they fucking kill her in the first like 10 minutes.
I want to say she was 21 to 23, somewhere in there during the filming. I didn't write hers down because, you know, she bites it. But everyone else, like, we're going to get to that scene in a second where they're all at the high school, like the core cast.
Yeah.
Oh my God, they look so old.
They do, and it's funny. But
like this, I feel like should have just taken place in college because Neve Campbell is 23, Skeet's 26, Rose McGowan's 23, Matthew Lillard is 26, and then how old was Jamie Kennedy? Courtney Cox and David Arquette were, well, she was 32 and he was 25, and then they were married from 1999 to 2013. I didn't realize their age gap was so big.
It was like,
I mean, it's not crazy. They're adults, but
yeah,
I don't know. It's just weird the way that she talks to him throughout the movie. Because she's like, oh, you're just a little boy. You're like, what, 12?
There are a couple. Well, no, she's like, you don't look a day older than 12, except for that upper torso area. And I was like, is that a compliment you normally give to guys? You don't look a day over 12, baby. Come to mama. What's going on?
Sorry, mommy.
He was giving off some vibes there, but whatever.
He acts so young, and I know that's like part of the bit. But man, when he's walking around like having an ice cream cone to take the edge off,
he's great. That's the best. That's my character. Fantastic. Dewey. Love him. All right, we're getting ahead of ourselves. Sorry, everyone.
We gotta go. Gotta go to her room.
We gotta meet the final girl, the real final girl. We were tricked. We thought our final girl was Casey Becker, but no, she's dead now. And we cut to Sydney Prescott in her room. And Billy sneaks in, her boyfriend. If you remember mm-hmm. the name Billy from our previous conversation, pretend you don't. He's totally a cool guy.
Yeah, totally normal. Nothing going on there.
Yeah, but he sneaks into her room, crawls in through the window. You know, hey, let's chat. But her dad, Sydney's dad, hears, because she screams the first time. Scream. Oh, my God, I get it. Okay, I'm going to pause right here. How do you feel about the name Scream, the title name Scream?
I can't think about it. Like, it means nothing to me. Like,
It's just like a separate neutral filler word
from the movie.
Okay, fair enough.
Because I feel like if the movie came out now, when I was like a conscious adult and it was Scream, I would be like, that's dumb. But because it's already like a part of pop culture with this name, I can't think bad of it, you know?
All right. I was just curious.
You hate it, I assume.
I don't hate it. I didn't actually give too much thought about it until like I learned that the original title was Scary Movie, which
that
I do.
Would have.
I like that one more though, because this movie plays into a lot. Like, that's one of the core ideas is, you know, what's your favorite scary movie, and that they watched scary movies to inspire, you know. So I'm okay with that, but you know, whatever. Scream, no, but I do like Scream, again, because I can't unassociate it. It will forever be with this movie. So anyway, but Billy scares her. Daddy tries to pop in, but it turns out that the way Sydney's room is laid out, her closet door, when it opens up, it provides a perfect block to her primary door. Yeah, once you figure that out, she's like, all right. So he can't get in. He can't really peek in. But when she opens the door, hey, it's all good. She's like, nothing's wrong here. And then he's like, by the way, to anyone that might be listening, I'm going to be going out of town, and this is my travel itinerary. So, okay. Billy's totally on the other side of the bed. I thought about that later. I don't know if they already knew this sort of stuff planned out or not.
Yeah, I don't know. You know what song is playing when Billy comes in?
Don't Fear the Reaper. It's a cover, mm-hmm. right? But it's Don't Fear it the is. Reaper.
And then that song is playing in the movie Halloween when Laurie and...
in the car, right? Annie?
Yeah.
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 Right. I didn't notice
but
that.
It's just kind of like a neon sign flashing Billy is the killer because he pops up and that song is playing.
I never thought about that. There's quite a few things that point to this sort of some of the killers, but it's almost so much on point that you're like, no, it couldn't be. So but that's the beauty of it, because it was Billy. After the dad leaves, Billy just tells Sydney it's all good. He was watching The Exorcist, and you know, naturally that made him think of their relationship. Very romantic movies. But he's pretty much like, yeah, so it got me jonesing, and I kind of want to get some light petting on. And then she's like, okay. But then he goes below the waist, and she's like, no. And he's all like, grr, but okay.
He's too horny.
He is a horny boy. And you know, I mean, he may look like motherfuckers in his mid-20s, but it's in this movie, he's 17, 18. Okay. Okay. I don't know.
But can we talk about how he looks on the movie poster?
I mean, oh,
he looks fucking 36.
Doesn't he look different on the poster?
He has a goatee.
And I was like, at what point
who
in the
is
movie,
this man?
Yeah, I was like, wait, he doesn't have that in the movie. Why does he have facial hair on the poster?
He looks old as shit.
Yeah, the goatee. I'm looking up this thing.
It looks like he's trying too hard to be Johnny Depp.
Apparently, one of that actually helped him a little. They liked that he looked like a young Johnny Depp from the original Nightmare on Elm Street. So that actually did help him a bit. But yeah, he's got the stash and the goatee. Why?
Was the tagline, someone has taken their love of scary movies one step too far.
Oh,
solving
my God, it does
mystery
say that.
Is going to be a murder. Ew.
The poster I'm looking at does not say. It just says the someone's taken their love of scary movies one step too far. See, that's a little on the point than if it was named Scary Movie. Mm. Oh, I see. There's a different poster with Drew Barrymore. Yep. It's going to be murder. Mm-hmm. Well,
it bums me out. that
how bad the poster
Matthew Lillard isn't on the poster. I love him.
And neither is Jamie Foxx, Randy. Well, you know, it does make sense that Matthew should have been on there.
Jamie Foxx?
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's Randy. Jamie
Kennedy.
Jamie Kennedy, fuck.
Very different guys.
Jamie Kennedy is not on the cover either.
Well, now we get to the school, and this is where she finds out that they did.
Yeah.
Her friend just breaks the news to her, Tatum.
kind of
too nonchalantly, you know?
Yeah, it's awesome. So there's like this dark humor that I really like. That's just my sense of humor. But yeah, I forgot how she phrases it. But it's very cold.
They're totally dead.
Oh yeah, she's like, "Oh, Casey Becker. She sits next to me in English." And then Tatum says, "Not anymore." I was like, "Yes, it's fucking hilarious." It's like in the real life, you'd be like, "Oh man, that's bad." But I'd also kind of like, if it's not someone you're close to, I don't know. Sometimes humor is a defense mechanism. Just saying.
Yeah. I think okay. you gotta make light of the situation, you know?
And yeah, this is the first time we're introduced to Tatum, her best friend, who also she mentions that the crime is the worst one that they'd seen in years, even worse than, well, it's bad. So
just come out and say it, Tatum. All right.
No, I appreciate this because this is breadcrumbs. He doesn't need to say, since your mother's a murder. He's like trying to have tact for her buddy. It's been not even a year.
Yeah.
It's like, sorry, it was bad. You know, she didn't realize what she was saying. And she name dropped Dewey. So even before we meet him, at least it's not a surprise that he's, you know, up in on that stuff. And then they have the interviews because the cops are pulling students one by one into the principal's office.
Very illegal. Makes no sense.
Oh, yeah. They don't have like the adults and
no. But I do understand to a point, like taking in Sydney just to see like, hey, are you okay? Has anyone been a weirdo to you just because of her background? But still, it's weird. But
it wasn't what the questions were. They were like, how well do you know Casey Becker? Did you like, all that? Yeah. There's one moment that I don't know if it was supposed to be to make you distrust our favorite principal. When Sydney gets in there, he puts his hand on her chin and it cuts back to the sheriff and his eyes dart up to that down and his eyes narrow for a second. I'm like, sheriff caught that, but he kept, I think it was intentional that it was in there, but I was like, oh damn.
This principal is a little too weird for me.
He is a little handsy.
Remember, your principal loves you.
And don't make me hate him now. He had quirks. Don't make me think about his quirks as being bad. But even then, when she comes in, they do another breadcrumb where Sydney Prescott, she was the daughter of, and then she comes in and, you know, they can't finish it. But I'm like, oh, it's her mother. Something happened with her mom. And we meet Dewey there too. Yeah, you know, I'm sorry, it's Deputy Riley today, Sid.
The fountain. Also another great scene that is recreated in the film Scary Movie.
Do they? So it's apparently, even though I've seen Scary Movie multiple times, I don't remember them spoofing this scene.
That's where they introduce everybody. This is where we get Matthew Lillard. I love him so much.
He cray cray.
Oh yeah, he's batshit, but I love him.
Stu's cray. Oh yeah, no, he's a great character.
Yeah, Stu is great. Randy's great too. Like, those two are probably my favorite characters. Like, I do like the way that Sydney acts, the way that she thinks, the way that she goes through situations. I like her as a character, but they're just fun.
Randy's my boy.
How could you gut someone? Easy.
Yeah, and fucking Stu, aka Matthew.
What is it? You cut him from groin to sternum?
He's like, he just tells him exactly what you do. And yeah. I think how Billy is like, it's called tact, fuck rag. I was like, Jesus, dude, her mother got murdered. Even though it's played for laughs, looking at it on rewatches, you're like, oh yeah, this dude is just like, yeah, this is how you do it. Because he fucking did it already.
But him being so like, non-silly, but blunt. Oh, yeah.
it fits the character.
Yeah. And then Billy is like, shut the fuck up. You know, it's just hard to really think at this point.
Oh, yeah.
Trust that me, they're guilty.
I wouldn't have thought it was them really either.
Also, they're just like dumb boys. Like even Randy, because mm-hmm. like he, I think, is the biggest red herring. And they try to make him seem like one, like the killers.
I don't know if
he's
the biggest. I think the biggest would be the father.
Yeah, but that's only if you're really paying attention.
I feel like there's quite a few. We'll get. Okay, well, I pay attention. So
what? Yeah, no, that's fine. But I think the way that they are pointing at Randy, like mm-hmm. Stu and Billy, they're pointing at him as their scapegoat.
Yeah.
Which is great. Like they're in the same group. It's easy to point to him because he's all movie obsessed and maybe, you know, you want to have your own essentially. Oh God. I just want to talk about it all at once. I'll save it.
But then, cause there's even some more clues in here to their guilt though, because after that, they're like, hey, Stu, didn't you sedate Casey? Yeah. For like mm-hmm. 2 minutes. And then Randy's even like, yeah, before she dumped you for Steve.
Uh-huh. And she's like, wait, I thought you dumped her for me.
And so it's played off again for laughs because so simply that last part lets you like forget. But really, it's also just reminded he did date her and she dumped him, which again puts a little now. And they're like, oh, did you tell the police that? But and obviously he didn't.
No.
So I'm like, oh, yeah.
Can you imagine those two together? Because I can't.
No, but. Yes, his character is so well. Maybe that's why she dumped him for Steve.
Yeah, a little too weird.
Yeah, a little too weird. But Tatum gives him an alibi, saying that he was with her. And then this is Randy again calling as he sees it. Oh, was that before or after he sliced and diced? And it's just,
what is he? Is he quoting something?
I don't know. I always
when
quote
he's like,
if I say that, I quote
your
him.
Pancreas. No,
oh, the liver. Like the, oh, yeah, I think he is. Or the like, is it true? Yeah, put her, they found her liver in the mailbox because I heard something like that. I think he's quoting something. Someone feel free to shame us on Twitter, tag us and be like, yo, this is what Randy was quoting.
Duh.
Yeah, obviously. Losers. But so again, they both go over the top, which helps mask the fact that two of the killers were just on the spot.
Liver alone.
Get it?
Liver. Like I could watch a movie of just them interacting all day. Like if that was just a shitty go nowhere sitcom, I would watch it all the time just because it's fun. It's a fun dynamic that
Let's
they have
go
going.
Visit Billy in prison.
Well, maybe in that world, they aren't the killers.
Oh, it's alternate timeline.
Yeah.
So our next scene, Sydney goes home to her giant ass motherfucking house.
So nice.
Yeah. Like I say that like it's mean, but it's more envy because, oh my God. It's got like a view to die for.
Mm-hmm.
It's got like an outside patio, like on top of another floor. I'm like, what the fuck does your dad do for the living? Cause that's a
house. The insurance money.
I don't know. Was the house that new though?
I don't know.
Cause Jesus Christ, that is a nice house. Like it was more envy. I was like, wow, that view is killer.
My question is,
I know I'm old. I'm spending time on all the wrong details.
Oh, yes, honey, exactly. Do you not know that I spend all of my time on like Zillow looking at houses that I'll never afford? No, my question is, with a house like that, why is she taking the bus? How old is she supposed to be?
That's
because her
point.
And Tatum both take the bus.
No, Tatum drives a car.
I thought, what? How? Because then she gets dropped off later.
Tatum is driving. Dewey drives him around for safety because he doesn't want to let Sydney out of his sight. But Tatum had cheer practice and she drives to the video store later and she arrives in her little red coupe.
But I thought she says like, bye, Sydney, or that's not her on the bus.
I don't think that's her. I think that's someone else. That's just some rando.
But yeah, I just wonder, like, is she like 15, 16? Because
no, I think she's, I feel like the
she's
juniors.
She's old.
Well, yeah.
Who like am I to talk?
Seniors? I don't know. Did they mention
I don't have a
this
license.
Year?
No. But in the next movie, comes out the college. Next year and they're in college.
So yeah, she's probably a senior. Hey, man, maybe she doesn't like driving. Maybe she failed driver's ed. Who knows? We don't know Sydney's life story. Her mother died last year. Okay. She doesn't feel like getting on the road. I'm just saying, who knows? She doesn't drive.
I get it.
Maybe the dad has the one car. I don't know.
I understand that we don't know what's going on yet. That it was just like what seems to be a random killing. I wouldn't let my friend go home alone. I know she's supposed to meet up with Tatum later, but she like falls asleep and it just stresses me out. I wouldn't let her go home alone.
You mean if you were Tatum, you wouldn't have let Sid go home alone?
Yeah.
Tatum had cheer practice.
Don't care. You're sitting in the fucking bleachers. You're doing your homework there.
That's something I hadn't considered.
I don't know. It just makes me nervous. And there's this part where Sid's walking around her house and you can like hear something creak.
You hear creaks. Yeah.
And it makes me so nervous.
Houses creak sometimes, but it adds to the tension. But yeah, she agrees to spend the night at Tatum's after Tatum's done with her cheer practice. And we get another breadcrumb because she's like, oh, you know, with all the police and reporters, it was like deja vu all over again. So even though we haven't yet got the full deets about her mom, we're getting there. And then that's when we do get the backstory because she's flipping through the channels. There's different news reporters talking about the murders. And they talk about Maureen Prescott's rape and murder a year prior. And they show her picture so that when Sydney goes to lie down, I mean, besides the fact that we know her name is Sydney Prescott and the victim was Maureen Prescott, to nail it home when she goes to lie on the couch, on the camera pans up to the photo showing Sydney and Maureen together. But then she falls asleep.
How can she sleep at a time like this?
And the couch didn't look that comfortable. You know, who knows? But yeah, she falls asleep, but a phone call wakes her up and it's Tatum. She's like, yo, I'm late, but I'll be there. And, you know, they have a brief phone call. And that's when the phone call ring, after that call's done, the phone rings one more time. But this time it ain't Tatum. It's the bad guy. But Sid thinks it's Randy.
See, that's the thing, is they all assume it's Randy every time.
That is, yeah. Even when he wears the costume later, Tatum thinks it's Randy.
And that's weird because she's like kind of into it. Not like into it.
But she was
like, want to play Psycho Killer? Oh no, Mr. Ghostface, don't kill me. I want to be in the sequel.
Well, I think that she's just like giving him shit for it and then is like, all right. But yeah, at first I was like, wait, did she think that was her boyfriend? But then no, she sees that it was Randy.
Yeah.
They all think it's Randy. That is true.
They're using Randy's like movie hobby as a scapegoat for themselves. All the other characters are able to like get comfortable with the idea that someone could be fucking with them because of the way that Randy is. But I don't think he's that kind of person.
It didn't seem like it, but
he doesn't do skits. All right. He just drops knowledge.
Yeah.
You know,
but yeah, they have a brief call and she's like, yeah, Randy, it's really nice what you're doing with your boys, blah, blah. And then, but she's like, it's not original. I was like, well, maybe that's because I'm not Randy. Bah, bah, bah. Oh, the question isn't who am I? The question is, where am I? We get into a little bit of hijinks just because she goes, I mean, hijinks is a strong word, but I use strong words. I'm a strong language kind of guy. The killer on the other end of the line claims to be on the front porch. So Sydney calls his bluff and goes out there. When she gets back inside.
When Sid is out on her like front porch, finger up her nose. Oh, can you see me? Can you see me now? What am I doing? Any other movie, I would have hated it, I think.
Why?
And I don't know. It's doing something stupid. Just sticking your finger up your nose. And I don't know. It's just, I love Sydney so much.
You say that as though her sticking her finger up her nose makes her no longer likable by you. Like, I like her so much, but what is up with that?
I think anyone else, I just would have taken it as way too stupid of a move. It's too silly, but I didn't get that vibe here.
I don't think I'd really get that vibe from anyone because she was just trying to call them out.
Yeah.
You know, like prove it, bitch. It's the simplest thing. But, you know, she kind of calls the bluff and she's like, I'm gonna hang up. And that's when the guy says, if I hang up on me, you'll die just like your mother. Yeah, and that's when we get the, I think she's like, fuck you, Cretan, slams the door, locks it.
And this is where the uncertainty of her mother's killer starts to really kind of come in, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the next morning, that's what... Isn't that what Gail says? Like, oh, you think he's still out there?
Oh, it comes up a few times. We start to get doubts cast on whether or not Cotton Weary is the real killer.
A name like that.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Who names their kid Cotton? Is that a thing? I hope that's not being rude to certain culture, but like, Reed Cotton?
Wasn't that the grandpa's name in King of the Hill?
Was it? Well, either way, it's the grandpa's name for a reason.
Anyway, good old Ghostface
pops out from the closet behind her where he was hiding. So do you know which one pops out and attacks her?
So Billy is the one that called and Stu is the one that attacked.
It makes sense. Okay. That's what
I always assumed it was Billy just because, I don't know, he seems awfully out of breath, you know? And he seems a little sweaty.
But it was too close to when the killer disappeared from the door and when he appears in the window a little bit. So we're jumping ahead just a tidbit, but that was my fault.
The Sydney phone call, that's confirmed by Kevin.
So Billy's the one taunting her on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
Stu's the one hiding in the closet. But he cops out and they scuffle. They get some blows in. But she tries to go out the front door, but the chain on it prevents her. So she bolts up the stairs. And just like earlier, when she locked her dad out with that makeshift Jiffy lock using the closet door, she does the same thing again. And the phone's not working, but thankfully she uses so she's got, it's Potec Def Typer 2. You know, it sounds like legit soft. I don't know if that's the real name of the software, but you know, if you can't use the phone, you can dial out. She dials 911 on the computer. And just as the killer was there, boom, Billy climbs into the window. And he's like, the door's locked. And I heard screaming. And I was like, really? I mean, like you said, he does seem out of breath. But that could have been.
He just climbed up to her window. Yeah, fair enough.
I don't know, but it's funny. I never got this vibe before, but once he's like, the door is locked, I heard screaming. I thought of Black Christmas. The last sequence when, I don't know if Steve, was that the name of the boyfriend? Oh, it was the boyfriend's all like, hey, it's me, I heard some stuff. And he kicks in the window and he's all weird and shit. And I'm like, I don't know, you don't seem like someone who's very concerned.
No.
But yeah, and he drops his cell phone. She's like, oh my God, it's him. But that was planned.
Your cell phone.
Yeah. But that was the planned, right? I'm pretty sure that one was planned to clear him.
Yeah. The funny thing is, earlier in the phone call, when she's talking to, well, we know now is Billy, and he asks her about her favorite scary movie, and she says, like, no, they're all the same. Some blonde girl with big breasts runs up the stairs instead of out the front door. And then that's what she ends up having to do.
But Ellie, in her case, she had to because she tried the front door. Which in Black Christmas, that was the same thing. She tried to go out the front door, but it was jammed. In this case, she tried the front door, but with the chain, but the killer was going to be up on her in time. She had to just make a choice. But I do like that she called it out and then literally did the same thing, which was the point. But she runs, she's like, oh shit, Billy, you're the killer. And he's like, no, it's not me. Please come back. No. She runs downstairs, opens the door. It's Ghostface Mask, but it's okay. It's because Dewey's holding it. And they arrest Billy.
Lock him up, throw away the key.
As they're taking him out, and he's like, call my dad. Tatum shows up in a car. Yeah, because she can drive. You didn't remember. How do you think she got there, Jacqueline?
I don't remember.
How'd she get there? That's right. But also Gail shows up. Yeah, they try and get some information out of Tatum, but she's not budging. If we go to the police station, at which point the sheriff is interrogating Billy, but with his dad. And that's when we found out that even Daddy didn't know that Billy had snuck out the night before to go see Sid. That makes sense that both of them were out. So that was their alibis. Billy had stopped by Sid's after or before, whatever, to kind of have his alibi. And Stu was with Tatum for part of the night for his alibi.
I like when the police officer, the head honcho cop.
I think it's the sheriff.
He was also in Nightmare on Elm Street.
Oh, yeah.
He is like, well, why do you have a cell phone? Huh? He's like, what do you mean, man? Everyone has a cell phone.
Not that time, man.
96. Not at 96.
Nope. They also call them their cellulars. They could have cloned the cellular.
Oh, God. And how it's going to take like 9 years to be able to get the fucking
records. It took like a day. It's a good day.
Still, she's out here calling the police with her computer, but you guys can't see his outgoing calls.
True. But yeah, so Billy's like, it's not me. And he's giving Sid the stink eye the whole fucking time. Mm-hmm. way to help your case, man. But afterward, they're like, all right, Dewey and Tatum decide, you know, Sid's going to come back with them. They sneak out the back while Dewey goes for the truck.
A lot of problems here. I got a lot of problems.
Go ahead. Why? Your problem.
Why do they even go outside yet?
Why doesn't he pull up and then they go outside?
Yeah, because of course Gale knows what to do. Of course Gale is going to stick her nose all up in this business. Is
there a backside to this thing? Yeah.
Oh, is this when she goes like, how's the book?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's coming out next year. I'll have to look for it. I'll send you a copy. I'll send you,
exactly. Bam! She right hooks her.
Where'd you learn how to punch like that or something? And then
that's what Dewey says. Yep.
And then the next scene is my most hated scene in the entire movie.
Really?
Despise. Why? Absolutely okay. Despise. Because I think they're trying to make them seem so young.
Oh,
the way
okay.
like the jammies that Tatum is in, the way her hair looks, the way she's like holding the stuffed animal. And she's like, yeah, bang. Sydney, super bitch.
Well, I don't know. I didn't think the dialogue. I always thought the bam and bitch went down. Like, that's totally something I could see from someone.
That was fine. I think it was just like the setting, the way she looked and like bouncing on the bed. I don't know. She just seemed like too childlike
compared to how she acts in like the 90% of the rest of the movie.
Yeah. And then how fucking dumb is their mother?
You have a call. Who is it? Is it my dad?
No. Here, I'll let you want to talk to him? You almost got butchered, but here's the phone. Not like, here's hey, Dewey.
Random guy.
You should maybe.
Yeah. Hi, and who is this? Dumbass. I'm here for Sydney. Okay, here, I'll go get her. But who's speaking?
Yeah, and like, if it was Stu, then he talks normal. Like, you would think she would recognize his voice, maybe.
Maybe. I don't know if she knows Stu. Well, I guess he is dating
Tatum. They're dating.
And that would be Stu because this is when he...
Okay, we, Jonah and I, have always thought that he uses his one phone call.
No, I don't think so. I think it's implied later.
No, I don't
think so. I think that's implied. And that's also still...
But I just think that would be so smart.
It would be. And that's why they bring it up.
Yeah.
But that's when you assume that there is one killer.
Well, you kind of have to think if they bring it up, probably not what happened.
But I mean, it comes up in an important scene later when she brings up that idea. But I'm fairly certain that he wouldn't have had his voice changer inside the police station.
No.
Like, is he going to literally like...
And if he did, they would have taken it.
Yeah. Yeah, so it had to have been Stu who made the call.
I'm sure he ditched it at some point. Because if they would have confiscated that, I feel like it would have been all over for him. But I like the idea of him like, yeah, I'll take my one phone call. And then he's like, just like huddled against the wall so no one hears. He's like, oh, Sydney. I don't know. I just wanted that to be what happened. I just think that whole scene is so silly and stupid. The mom is dumb. And then a fucking officer idiot comes in there wielding a gun, finger on the trigger.
Except the phone.
Hello. Picks up the
That part does, that makes me laugh though, because it's like in Dewey's head, he's about to like go toe to toe with the killer and have like a discussion. Like
fucking
the guy's
doofus.
Gonna be like, yes, who is this? And he's gonna be like, Deputy Riley. Yeah. But it's part of the, so I didn't also apparently Dewey wasn't supposed to be, he was supposed to be more hunky and stuff, and they disallowed him, they allowed David Arquette to
be a dork
audition
instead.
Well, they allowed him to audition, and then Wes Craven he tried his audition, he played it more dorky, kind of down to earth, not and then Wes Craven liked it, so he's like, yeah, we're gonna go with that. But originally it was he wouldn't have even qualified for casting because they wanted someone hunky. But during that call, this is where we get another hint about her being wrong, Sydney possibly being wrong about the killer, or who killed her mother, because the killer on the line taunts her and says like, poor Billy boyfriend, you fingered the wrong guy again. And it's like, oh, when did she do it before? Which they answered literally in the next scene, which is the next morning, and they're showing Cotton Weary on the TV.
Is that the next time she goes to school?
That's that.
There's
same
a couple
morning.
Things that happen. First thing, this all moves very fast. Like in retrospect, when I think about this movie, I'm always like, aren't there more scenes? Just because I want to be like with these characters longer. there's not more scenes. This is very fast.
The third act, which is the, you know, in the house,
20 minutes sequence.
No, it's like 40.
I know I'm exaggerating, but
like
a little
bit. The bulk
bit.
Of the movie is like there, which you just don't, it doesn't feel like it, because well, things are just like kicking in, and from there on it's just you're cruising.
Well, and there's so many like set areas in that house. Like, there's the garage, there's the front room, then there's like the outside portion, the
kitchen,
the kitchen different. Chef's kiss, that the fucking upstairs,
they go upstairs
kitchen.
To the bedroom.
Oh yeah, that tiny ass fucking bed for those grown ass adults. I'm just saying.
Well, that's fair. I was just mentioning all the different locations in the big ass fucking house.
I want to talk about the decor. Did you see that you could stay in that house, that they were doing like a raffle or something? That would have been so cool.
That would have been baller, yo. And with David Arquette and some other stuff. But I was like,
and that,
yeah,
that house is going to be in the next movie.
Nice, going back.
Anyway, we're back at the high school. You'll be safe here. It's school. Yeah, okay. Sure. Do you know who is that reporter?
Oh,
that they hear?
I forgot who she is, but tell
her
everyone.
Movie was mentioned. Exorcist. Linda Blair Reagan. Exorcist, okay. Yeah, she looks fucking the same.
That's
like not
like,
the
okay.
same, but you know, like you can see it in her. She's like, how does it feel to be that? How does it feel to have been
nearly
butchered?
Yeah, something like that. The people deserve to know. They have a right to know. The people want to know. They have a right to know. I'm like, no, bitch, you don't have a right to shit. You got a right.
How does it feel to be almost brutally butchered?
Yeah.
They have a right to know.
It feels amazing. Also, in that morning, Dewey also revealed that Billy got released because his phone bill was clean, as was planned.
Mm-hmm. And then she goes up to Gail and she's like, come on, you owe me. I don't know you shit. You owe my mother. And she's like, oh, well, I guess. Because Gail wrote this book based on the court case of Sydney's mother.
The Woodsboro Murders, I think that's what it's called.
Is it only one?
A murder? Shit, no, it's probably something different. The Woodsboro Murders late is the book in the sequels based on this one. I'm wrong.
Yeah.
I'm wrong. Damn.
That's when she like hits her where it hurts, because she's like, anyone could have written this. Anyone would have. I just got to it first. But Gail says, well, what do you want? Like, you got what you wanted. Cotton Weary, he's on death row. He's going to get gassed. What more do you want? For someone that seems sympathetic of Cotton's character, just to be like, yeah, he's fucking getting gassed, Sid. Like,
that is Gail's MO, though. I mean, her first thing with Kenneth, she's like, Kenneth, I know that you're 50 pounds overweight, but when I say, when she says, like, hurry up, it means move your fat tub of lard ass now. And you're like, holy shit.
She's so much.
Yeah, that's Gail's character. But yeah, also Sydney is totally like, my mother would have never touched him. She does. She's very, this is one of the few times when you're like, Sydney, oh, honey bun. Her little naivete about her mother's chastity, or however you want to put it.
Not celibacy, but.
Yeah, it's exactly. Well, yeah, you know, her mother.
Essentially, sanctity of marriage and whatnot.
Yeah, was cheating. And she's like, my mother would have never done that. But apparently everyone disagrees.
That's so much to think about. To have this image of your mother, especially being like young, being in your teens, and to have no idea that your mother isn't the person that she's making herself out to be to you. Like,
find it out after she's been brutally murdered and, you know, assaulted.
Like, she didn't get to tell you her side of the story. She
didn't. Everyone's just like, oh, by the way, remember the mom you love?
Your mom's a slut bag. To think about, like, that's why her mom was murdered. The dad has to live with, like, did he know? Did he just lose his wife and then find out after the fact? Or,
oh, I don't know. I never really considered too much about the father, just because Sydney's the main character. But that's a good point. It would be interesting, because even throughout the rest of the series, you do see the father in some parts, and he's a minor. Yeah, he's a quick flash, and that's it. Someone runs through the hallway, wearing a ghost. He's like,
yeah. And then he's like, oh, it's like Christmas.
Yes. He literally said it's like Christmas. And one of my favorite lines from Tatum is she's like, stupidity leak. And she bonks his head with a fucking lollipop like 3 times.
I loved that.
So did I. I'm like,
I need to add that to my repertoire. Lingo.
Yes. Stupidity leak. It's, I've heard it so many times. I'm like, that's such a good little line. Stupidity leak.
Imagine, because you know Stu's batshit. So, like, imagine his fucking ego. It is throbbing right now. You have motherfuckers running down the hall dressed like you, for you, because of you.
Well, that makes sense why he was so fucking hyped up. Yeah, but Sid runs into Billy and they have that wonderful.
This motherfucker, murder. I want to murder his ass for this. This. Horny motherfucker. Okay.
Yeah. It does not make Billy look good. Like, even if he wasn't the killer after this conversation, you're like, oh, dude.
Oh, God. It's disgusting. He goes, he's just released from like the holding cell. Okay. That is fresh. What does he want to talk about right now? The fact that he's not getting his dick wet. He's like, Sid, you got to move on. It's been a year. Almost a year to the day since your mom was brutally murdered.
He doesn't say it like that, but yeah, he does. That is the gist of the conversation. It's also because he's like, what don't you understand? He's like, understand what? That I have a girlfriend that would rather accuse me of being a psychopathic killer than touch me, when she hadn't brought up physical contact at all. And that's what she's like, you bring that up now? And he's like, it's been a year. Well, I think it's time you got over that. I'm like, well, I think it's time you go fuck yourself. So,
just like how I had to get over my mom, because my mom left me. And she's like, yeah, your mom left because she wanted to, not because she's dead.
She's like, yeah, your mom is not a deadbeat. She's not lying in a grave somewhere. That's how she said it. Yeah.
Insane that that's how he's going to choose to like deflect the entire situation. I'm out here murdering people, but you're not giving me the sex. So clearly you're the villain, Sydney. It's your fault that this is happening. I honestly wonder how this would have went down if she would have given it up a long time ago. Because they've been dating. Have they been dating for like a year?
At least.
It's been a while.
I would hope that he started dating her before he murdered her mother, but I don't know. Wait.
Oh, yeah, that makes it a lot better.
Okay, because your look, I was like, wait, did I say something wrong? I'm like, that made sense, right? Well, I mean,
because there's no way to make this good.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? I was like,
but I liked you first, and then your mom just happened to be a slut bag.
I think that's how.
So that she was just a casualty. But you and me, babe, this makes me think of like Heathers.
In the opening scene, or not opening, but when he first climbed through the window, I recall him saying the reason the exorcist reminded him of their relationship. He's like, because we started heavy NC-17 or moving solid R moving for an NC-17, but lately we're just edited for TV. Which, by the way, fucking totally plays into the scary movie fucking title. This is why it I'm does. Like, there's enough references that makes me go for it. But I understand.
This movie is rated R. But yeah, I absolutely hated that scene. It infuriates me every time I watch it.
It's just, he's totally a dick. Whether he meant it or not, he's straight up a dick.
And I just feel so bad for her. Not only because, like, she's fucking motherless. And at this point, you do worry that maybe her dad is dead or the killer. That's like the red herring that they're trying to push, or he's already dead, which is something that Randy mentions in a scene coming up. Yep. Is that like, oh, he's probably already gone. So she's possibly here. No parents. Boyfriend's a possible killer. Like, there's so many things that are going on, and she's worrying about the fact that she's not ready to have sex. And then when she does have sex, I'm livid, wasted on the skis ball.
She runs off to the bathroom. But before we get to that, there's a bathroom scene, but there's one quick like interlude where we get into this is your boy, Principal Hembree, expelling students for the prank.
I thought this doesn't happen until after the bathroom, because she gets chased by them after the bathroom.
No, because that one in there was actually someone in the... Oh. They're
let me look in my handy dandy list.
No, I'm right, first of all.
Well, that's fine.
No, but I just meant because I have that note. He expels Sydney's two guys.
Bathroom attack is a prankster,
but she says she didn't think it was. Oh, so was that them then? Oh my God.
I think it is.
This whole time, I thought that that was, because then they had to have been waiting in there the whole fucking, so these, that was just some rando getting his rocks off in the bathroom, like waiting that whole time.
I think so.
Because, no, it makes sense, because I also did notice. Because
the person doesn't have a knife is what is the justification on this website.
Oh, I didn't notice that. I did notice that the person was wearing jeans and black boots, and Sid was most definitely, not Sid, Stu was most definitely not. He was wearing khakis and sneakers in the next scene. Billy was wearing jeans, but they never showed his shoes in the previous scene. I was scoping it out. I was like, yo, I was like, let me see if we see which one of these dudes is. So it makes sense.
Break out the magnifying glass.
Okay, but no, it does actually, but in the order, he does do the expel two students pranks, because I was writing these notes down as I was watching and pausing.
Oh, I believe you. You're a better note taker than I.
But then maybe, I don't know, maybe it was just shot out of order, or not shot out of order, but just put in, I don't know, because it was also.
Or maybe there's more.
I got it. So he expels two kids in the office, two. Mm-hmm. One of them was the bathroom prankster. The other one, one of them ran through the hall going woo-woo, like a little bit earlier. So I think they each did separate pranks and he expelled them both. So it would make sense. One was the stupid kid running down the hall, and one, that dude was a dick then. The dude in the stall, I had always assumed it was one of the killers fucking with her. It makes sense that it isn't. Doubly so, because apparently they almost removed this scene entirely. But Wes Craven was like, no, we should keep it in, and adds more. The bathroom scene, when we learn about Sydney's mother, via the other two characters, the girls, where she's talking about, she talks shit about Sydney's mom. Like,
that girl,
crazy.
Such a bitch.
And she talks shit about Sydney, crazy.
Now, I know we're in the times of COVID, so it's a lot different. I'm constantly thinking about germs. You know, I got my hand sanitizer strapped always. That girl puts her fucking finger in her mouth for her adjustment of her lipstick. Now, I don't know if she went to the bathroom.
It came out of the stalls.
Nasty.
I never noticed that, because I just listened to the dialogue, and I know she's doing makeup, but I don't.
But she does makeup, and she puts her finger in her mouth to make sure like there's not too much like in a certain spot.
Thing I did not pay attention to is the application of makeup. So that part.
But she doesn't wash her hands. Nasty bitch out here trying to spread some hot gossip, but she can't even keep her own hands clean.
Oh, you were going to have some juice. I thought you were going to say she's out here spreading hot gossip, but she's spreading germs. I thought you were going to go like there.
No, she's just nasty. But you know who she was?
Nasty. She looked familiar.
She looks kind of like Tori Spelling, honestly.
That's okay. That's definitely who she looks does, like.
Which is funny because.
Yes, we'll get to.
Who and I can't.
Yep, that comes up in a little bit.
Which actually comes to fruition later, which is great. But. No, she's a Skeet's girlfriend. So that's how she got the role.
Oh, in real life?
Yeah.
Oh, but one thing that I want to get back, you like not liking the expulsion sequence, which is weird though, because so he's expelling two kids. But then wait, it wouldn't make sense, because if he's expelling them before this prank that didn't even happen yet, fuck, I just ruined my own logic. Listen, I know what happens. I'm going to have to rewatch this again, but I know. I know. Okay. I'm feeling Scream's messing me up. It's gaslighting me. It's changing my perceptions of reality. Okay, but either way, when he is expelling these two students for crimes that either they have committed or will commit in the future, he specifically pulls out this giant pair of fucking scissors. And he's like, he says like, oh, expulsion is too good for them and that they deserve to be like, I don't know the words he used, but he literally, like, even though he's got the blades of the scissors closed, he slashes them physically, like across their chests, where I was like, I don't know, man, that's like threats. That's all weird. But one of the reasons I think we were getting a little more Principal Himbry is because they needed to set up his murder, which is going to happen in a couple scenes, because apparently during one of this, when the script was being read originally, he didn't get murdered. There was a big gap where no one got killed, and they wanted someone to get killed, another victim in the meantime. So we get Principal Himbry put right there because it's most convenient to for pacing. That's literally why he dies. They had to add that scene in there later, not later, but They're like, they had to change that.
Sydney is chased by Ghostface in the bathroom. The killer then murders Principal Himbry and hangs him on the goalpost. Both attacks were likely Billy. As the bathroom scene happens right after Sydney has a confrontation with him, the camera lingers on the jeans Ghostface is wearing in the scene. Mm-hmm. However, Stu is wearing khakis that day.
That's what I said, homie.
Principal Himbry's murderer is also Billy because Stu isn't around when it happens, having left the school with Tatum and Sydney before attending to his party plans. I really always thought it was the prankster, because I'm just like, how is he going to double back so fast, and how does he have the costume?
He might. Well, she runs into the bathroom, which means he could have followed her because she goes into a stall, and mm-hmm. then he went in and got in the stall, because the scene with the person in the stall, it actually shows mm-hmm. the boot stepping down and mm-hmm. then like the costume kind of being lowered, as though he mm-hmm. was adding it in, like he had it somewhere and was putting it on in the stall. So yeah. I don't know. That's,
he didn't have a backpack.
Not that we saw.
Ooh, did those toilets have toilet tanks?
This is my emergency ghost face stash. Okay, Sydney uses the second floor bathroom over on this one. Yeah. I have
one stashed in the third stall and then in the seventh, just in case she's in the third one already.
Yep, you need backups.
Gotta be prepared.
All right, so it was Billy then, probably. He did wear, they didn't show his boots, but he was wearing jeans. And that was my thing. I was like,
he seems like a boots kind of guy.
I think he would, but I was waiting. I wanted to see them before I said anything. Yeah. So I couldn't confirm nor deny. Gail, this is our favorite scene about Gail flirting with Dewey, when she's like, you don't look a day over 12, except for that upper torso area. Does the force require you to work out?
Well, like as he's leaving, he's like, you look way better in person. She's like, oh, you do watch the show.
I'm 25. I was 24 for a whole year. Because she said the demographics, like she just missed them. I do like some of that dialogue. I was like, oh. But some of it, I was like, okay, it's kind of, I mean, I do like the overall.
He's working with what he's given, you know?
And it's working for him. So like, hey, yeah. I respect it.
Yeah.
He even mentions, he's like, with my boyish good looks, his like muscle mass has increased my not reputation, but it's like something, you know, because like they take him most seriously as a police officer. Like, yeah. It's so fucking funny because no one takes him seriously. And then they cancel school because of the curfew. And that's when Stu is like, wee, telling everyone that he's going to have a banger at his house. Everyone hop on board. And you should hop on board, listener, because we're almost into the third act of this freaking movie. But we get, again, this is the scene I think they were setting up earlier, because we jump back to Principal Himbry. Someone's knocking on his door, which is one of those times it's kind of BS, because it's like, and he opens the door, and boom, no one's there.
We didn't talk about the time when Himbry puts on the mask.
Oh, that's okay. That's right. It's in this scene. He puts it on right before the knock scares him. So go ahead, tell them when he puts on the mask, inform them.
He puts on the mask. No, but it's funny because he has all of these little quirks, these unsettling things that he does or things that he says. I'm like, is he trying too hard to be wholesome? He like looks longingly at this mask almost, and he puts it on and then he has to take it off real quick.
But doesn't he try and like scare himself in the mirror? Like,
oh yeah, he does.
So I think he's just like, well, let's see what these kids it's all about. I don't know. That's kind of the vibe I got. Like, and he's like, and then he's like, this is stupid. That was what I was thinking, but I could be misinterpreting.
I think he was trying to tap in.
He's gonna solve it. He's gonna figure out the crimes. Get into the mindset of the killer. Sydney Prescott's the next victim.
I looked at a list of like Easter eggs you may have missed in Scream. And one of them was as the principal's like in his little closet, mm-hmm. there's the Fonz's leather jacket in there.
Is it? That's awesome.
And I'm like, is it? I don't know. Might be.
Oh, okay.
It might be a little like room 237. Homage. Yeah. No, I don't know. Do, do, do,
do, do. This is when you look deeper into it, there's true meaning behind that leather jacket.
Let's just think timeline here. School day is out. They possibly got out a little early, but let's say they didn't. It's 3 o'clock. Let's just say it's 3 o'clock. Curfew's at 9. At the party, someone calls Stu's house to say that the principal got. He's hanging from a goalpost. How long do you think his body was there? 3 hours?
Well, who's 4 hours? Say they it's hung dark it up outside. Right away.
They didn't have to, but I'm just saying, like, oh, that sucks, dude.
Oh, yeah.
Just like nasty. Poor guy.
And our listeners don't even know how he died yet. We skipped that part.
Oh, right.
Yeah. It's okay. Yeah, he gets stabbed. But yeah, so spoiler, he's trying on the mask.
Shocker. You knock, get knock. Stabbed and scream.
I know. It's weird. Either there's a knock on the door and possibly there's no one out there. This is where we get our little cameo, Wes Craven. You're not digging it. Let's hear it.
I'm not digging it.
All right, let's hear the great. Because he goes out, he checks the hallway.
The janitor is there. Uh-huh. The janitor being a guy dressed as
very similar Freddy Krueger.
He's got the sweater. He's got the hat.
The hat. He does not have the blades.
No, he has a mop. But little do you know, that is actually Wes Craven, the man that made that movie.
And this movie. And this one. Movie, yeah. And his character in the janitor's name is Fred. He says, hey, Fred. And then Fred calls him a prick as he shuts the door. I was like, Freddy Krueger.
It's so silly.
But I'm okay with that. Okay, but I'm a sucker for certain things, and I get it. It is pretty silly. I just thought it was a nice... This movie is so much meta, references to everything. If you're vocal, let us know, yay or nay. Do you like Wes Craven's cameo? Did you even know that was Wes Craven? Because
do you forget that's in this movie? Because I do.
I don't. I remember this. I always just think, okay, it's a little Freddy Krueger reference. But it was a while before I learned that was Wes Craven. And I was like, oh,
it's not
okay.
The only Freddy Krueger reference. Well, it's not the only Nightmare on Elm Street reference. Like I mentioned before, we have the same cop. And then, you know, Tatum's wearing the number 10 jersey. Just like Johnny Depp's jersey.
I knew that the fact that Skeet's character, because he looked like a young Johnny Depp in Nightmare on Elm Street.
When he had that goatee, man, looked like very much adult Johnny Depp.
Tatum and Sid talk a little bit outside.
This is when Sid is starting to kind of like break down a little bit. Mm-hmm. And she's getting really concerned that she's put the wrong guy in prison, which, like, rightfully so. That's a terrible thing.
I don't even think she was necessarily as concerned that she put the wrong guy in prison as much as it meant that the killer right guy was still all free and like, uh-oh.
Yeah, I think she feels some guilt there too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's a scary situation. She's like, well, that means then the killer's still out there. Don't go there, Sid. You're starting to sound like some Wes Carpenter flick.
Yep. Not Wes Craven, John Carpenter.
Not John Carpenter. There's apparently a couple goofs in here with like ADR. There's one part, I think it's when she's talking to Stu when things are going down. And does he have the gun? And no, Billy has the gun and he shoots Randy. Yeah. I don't know. It's somewhere like in the climax. Sid is saying one thing, but mouthing another.
Oh, I never noticed that. Interesting.
I think there's a couple goofs like that.
Gotcha.
Don't care. Doesn't faze me.
Yeah, well, I didn't even notice it, and I watched it.
Yeah, I had to look at a list of things you may have missed in Scream 1996 to find out that tidbit, and I already forgot it, so it really doesn't matter to me.
How do you feel? So it's at the end of the scene after that line, they like go inside. They show like Ghostface in the fucking bushes, like, ooh, he's out stalking.
So they do show him in the bushes, and then later on in the grocery store.
What's up with that? I don't know how I feel about it.
Do you think he's actually there, or do you think it's just supposed to be like, make us anxious, we're worrying too much, we're going to see him everywhere sort of thing?
I honestly would go with option A, the former, just that he was really there, only because there's nothing else in this movie that would imply he's not. Like, there's never a time where in this movie, Sydney thinks she sees him and it turns out she didn't see him. And these times she doesn't even see him in the back. It would be for us. It would be a gag purely for the audience, which doesn't make as much sense. Like, then you're like too meta. Those little bits seemed a little cheesy. Cause I was like, wait, so someone literally was like following her around with
exactly. Just tiptoeing.
Okay, people can't see, but Jacqueline's miming it perfectly. It's just like the over exaggerated I'm sneaking around. Yep. Pink Panther style. If it's that early in the day, if they wanted to hide, like, just
who's not seeing this motherfucker?
And as I said, I love this movie. This is me again, nitpick moment.
And I think it would have to be Billy, if anybody, because Stu's busy. He's got a party to tend to.
Yeah, Billy doesn't have anything on the agenda. He's like, let's see, what do I gotta do? Creep on Sydney. Creep on Sydney. Kill Principal Hembree. Creep on Sydney. All right.
From check cool post
mark. Yeah, he's like, damn, now I need to get with Stu with that. That'll be 5 o'clock before the party. He's got the keg.
Flirt with girls in horror section.
Right, because that's actually, that's a good point. Both, the next scene, right after that, both Stu and Billy are in the horror. So what, one of them snuck around, peeked at her house, is like, okay, they didn't see me. My job is done. This is me being a nitpicky little bitch, but now I've never thought this much about it.
I like the idea that they weren't there, and it's just
I like fear that idea
of Ghostface just creeping in.
I like that idea, but I don't buy it that it's that's what it was. I wish it was.
That's
that
fair.
I don't believe it. But yeah, okay, so now we go to the video store.
My favorite scene.
I was gonna say it's a fantastic, I don't know if it's my favorite, but it's one of mine. We get Randy in full Randy mode.
Yeah, Randy, you get Randy going full Randy, and then you get Stu,
who's also doing, yeah.
Oh, he's so good. I mean, you're hitting me in the nostalgia. You know, we're at a video store. Fucking love to see it. My favorite place to be.
It's also they're having a curfew, so no one can go out. So it's like busier than usual. He's like, hey, we had and a mess running in the horror section.
There's a murderer. So like, of course, they're going to all get scary movies. But the girl, she comes up and she's like, oh, what was it?
What's the werewolf movie?
The mom from E.T. I love people like that, where you can just like say a thing and they know.
Silver Bullet's an interesting movie. Like, I like it. Even and King? Also it's, yeah. And like Gary Busey's in it. And a kid in like an electric, it's like a motorized wheelchair. And then it's about werewolves.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's exactly the word. I it's like, I enjoy it, but I'm also like, Jesus Christ. But yeah,
I feel like anything bullet. With Gary Busey is going to be a little.
Yeah. I think he's actually bonkers. Like somewhat, he's like the cool uncle in that.
That's great.
Yeah, they're all in the video store where Randy works. Yep. But Stu,
where he's been fired from twice.
Yep. And Stu and Billy are just there.
Billy's chatting it up with the ladies.
Right. Stu actually has a reason to get there. He needs the movies for his party later, because later they're going through horror movies. They start chatting about just the murders
and Sydney,
who they think it is in general, all that sort of things. And there's a moment that I really love, because so Billy's over talking to the girls. It's Stu and Randy. Randy implies that Billy's definitely the killer. And Stu's like, well, why would he want to kill his own girlfriend? And he said, there's always some stupid bullshit reason to kill your girlfriend.
Yes.
In the background of the shot, there's a woman in the next aisle who looks up as he yes. says that. And it's so funny.
Perfect.
She looks around. And then he's like, yeah. And then she shakes her head and walks away. And I'm like, I love it. Because literally she catches him saying that. It's so funny. And then this is where I was saying that the red herring thing. Stu is trying to play the dad as the red herring here. Like hardcore. Because this is where he's like, you know what? I think the father did. Like, why can't the cops find him, man? It's like, you know why, motherfucker. You got him.
I just wish there were more video stores. I know that's so dumb, but I love them so much.
I get it.
Thought they were great. If you were the only suspect in a senseless bloodbath, would you be standing in the horror section?
I love Randy.
Now that Billy tried to mutilate her, do you think Sid would go out with me? Yeah, there's always some stupid bullshit reason to kill your girlfriend. That's the beauty of it all. Simplicity. Besides, if it gets too complicated, you lose your target audience.
He's so good. And I love his formula line. There's a formula, a very simple formula. Everybody's a suspect. And everyone in the freaking store just looks at him.
And isn't that when Billy comes up and it's like, well, maybe it was you.
It probably is. I didn't write that down, but I know they have that interaction. He's like, yeah, you're right. If I were you, he's like, I'd be the first prime suspect. But yeah, that's totally in that moment. And he's like, and Randy's just breaking it down. even after Stu continues to say the father, he thinks the father did it. Randy calls him a red herring flat out. He's like, nah, yeah, father's still a red herring. He's like, his body will come out in the third act somewhere. Like, eyes gouged out.
missing fingers or something. And then it's just like the way that Stu's like body language, like he's leaning all over everything. He feels like very nonchalant. Like you wouldn't, he seems so confident talking about all this stuff. Like he's thought it out. Billy is a bit more aggressive.
Oh yeah.
In the situation, definitely more accusatory, and then kind of, well, he just gets like defensive when like he gets blamed for things. Like, what do I have to do to like prove that I'm not the killer? Or like,
don't be the killer.
Yeah. But oh man. And then like Stu like wraps his arms like over Randy.
Yeah.
I love it so much.
It's a good scene, a lot of good character interactions.
Yeah, and it's nice to see them all reacting to each other. And I like that too, because then it's not like they're doing it to impress like the girls at all, like kind of showing off or anything. Because I feel like the water fountain scene when they're like sitting over there, I felt like it was kind of a pissing contest with Randy trying to like one up or kind of like call out. But now they're just like talking shit. I do wonder like their friend dynamic. Why are they all friends? Are they actually friends?
That's a good point, because we never really see, I mean, technically this whole story takes place over the course of a few days.
So but they all expect Randy to like be calling them or like playing jokes on them.
So I mean, it seems like he's definitely part of the friend group for sure. Definitely seems like it.
I feel like he's been friends with the girls probably longer than
Randy,
the guys have been dating them.
Stu and Billy. Yeah, that's not, that makes sense.
I don't know. Just a hunch. Maybe that'll get mentioned in the sequel.
The sheriff tells Dewey the calls were traced to Neil Prescott, Sydney's father. Bump. So again, adding to the red herring.
As he's fucking sucking down a cigarette. And he's like, oh, I thought you quit.
And then he's like, oh, but wait till you hear this shit. Like, it got me back on. Dewey says, his exact quote, there's no way his cellular could have been cloned. And that literally he fucking calls it, but it's completely brushed aside because it's not even answered. The sheriff just says, there's more. Guess what tomorrow is? The anniversary of his wife's death. Wrapped up is, Dewey fucking called it. And I think that's the beauty, because literally,
he's too dumb for anyone to be like, oh, yeah, maybe he's right.
Not even that. This was like, not even that he thought he was dumb. It was just it got overlooked. But I love it, because this way, when it happens later, when they mention that they call him the cell phone, I was just like, it makes sense. Literally, they mentioned that was a possibility earlier. They just fucking didn't look into it. So it kind of preps it for later.
With that guy, the age that he is, maybe he's just like, cloning? What are you talking about? Like, that's not a thing.
We could.
Like, I love that scene, and I love Dewey just chomping on his ice cream cone.
Yep, the cop sheriff's smoking a cigarette, Dewey's licking some ice cream.
Just a wholesome little dude. But I know he doesn't leave them for long, like he ends up coming back to the party, but the fact that he drops them off at the party is just insane to me.
Well, what would you want him to stay at the park, like inside, or just in the car up front?
Them go. But I mean, I assume it's because, oh, they're teens, they're just gonna sneak out if I don't let them go.
Yeah, it's probably that. And I would think that he's also incorrectly, well, I guess no, they had already suspected Billy. But no, yeah, I guess it was more, all right, well, at least we know where they're really at, and we'll have a cop right out front. So who's gonna try anything? But obviously
that does not go the way
the
they
bad
think.
Guys try things. But yeah, this is literally, so once they drop, once Dewey drops Tatum and Sydney off, this is like,
we're in
the final stretch. We don't leave this. I mean, we stay in the general vicinity, but we don't really leave this
house.
We
stay on the property.
We stay on the property. Yep.
Yeah.
And then Gail and her cameraman, Candace, show up. They encounter Dewey. Gail and Dewey check out the party together. And she sneaks a wireless camera.
Stu is very excited that she's there.
He like rolls over, you know, I never really paid attention to why he would have been excited. It makes more sense now.
Yeah, he's like, killer. Oh, it's the girl from whatever her show top is.
Story thing. Yeah, something. I don't know what it was called.
He's there in his little like satin robe. Yeah, she sneaks her little camera in. It has a direct feed to the truck outside. But as we see later, it's a little bit delayed.
30-second delay from when it happens to when they see it on the screen. Totally does not play an important part later at all. No reason to pay attention to that. But yeah, she sets up the camera so it's in the living room where they're watching movies. And you can get a good view of the couches. Yeah, as you said, Stu hops out over the couch and disappears. He was super excited. He tells Tatum to go grab some beers.
What am I? The beer wench.
Yeah, I don't mean, I just meant the quote. And then I think even Randy, like, doesn't Randy want to go get his camera? I feel like even Randy's excited because he disappears too, which I think mm-hmm. is important, because later when you're not sure if it's Randy or Stu, it becomes a decision when you think it might be one of them.
You mean Billy or Stu?
No, Randy and Stu is when they're still like outside. When you're trying to think. And she's like, let us in. No, it was him. No, it was him. Oh, we'll get to that. So either way, both of them are MIA for the upcoming scene. Tatum mm-hmm. going to get the beer.
According to this website, it is Billy that kills Tatum. But really? This is the heaviest and most controversial debate in the Scream series. But Billy killed Tatum while Stu was hosting the party. He wouldn't have been able to leave the party for a few minutes without drawing suspicion.
He just disappeared over the couch. This is why I thought it was him. But I'm not sure, because at one point I thought the grunt sounded like Stu.
Yeah,
but then a different grunt sounded like Billy, and I was like, fuck, yeah. Which of them is it?
He appears less than moments after Tatum's death, giving Stu a telltale look and punching him in the arm, possibly to signal that Tatum is dead. Billy's voice and grunts can also be heard as he receives blows by Tatum. Stu likely locked the door behind her, though, which he could easily do and then blend back into the party.
Well, but he appears at the door, so why would Stu have locked I guess he would have locked the door behind Billy.
Yeah, only locked on one side.
We're going to do the play-by-play. So Tatum goes to the garage to get the beers, and the door slowly shuts behind her. Actually, yeah, that makes sense then. She goes to get the beers, the door is locked, so she has to go through the garage door, but Ghostface closes it. Oh, okay, so yeah, he does he probably locks it when she first goes in, and then Billy, fully suited up, would then follow, open it, and appear, because she goes to get the beers, turns around, and then Ghostface is between her and the door back to the house. And like we said before, or not just we, you, like Jacqueline mentioned before, everyone thinks this motherfucker's Randy, because straight up, in full Ghostface costume, she's like, Randy, like, take that off or Sydney's gonna kill you, something like that. It's just like, damn.
Yeah, I know that Randy says some like questionable things, and his sense of humor is questionable, but like, he has a huge crush on Sydney, so I feel like he wouldn't go that far.
Hey, Billy is in a relationship with Sydney, and he goes that far. So yeah. Apparently you don't know what someone's really capable of. You mentioned it earlier, but she's doing that whole like, oh, are we gonna play this, you know, the horror movie,
we're gonna play Psycho Killer,
oh, I want to be in the sequel. But then she keeps thinking it's Randy until the mother effer pulls out a knife and slides it across her arm, slashing her. They get in a tuffle. She jukes him for a while, then slams him in the face with a freezer door. And literally in my notes, I said, and the grunt sounded a lot like Billy. But I was like, earlier, I thought it was someone else. So I got confused. But Tatum ends up, she goes to the door. It's still locked. She tosses a bunch of beer bottles at Ghostface. But overall, she handles herself pretty well.
I really enjoy that.
She goes down swinging. But then she attempts to crawl through the doggy door on the garage door, at which point our killer simply raises the garage door, and Tatum's head is crushed between the door Ooh. And the frame. It's gnarly. It's a squish. I don't think the door itself would have really had enough power to lift her up. Those doors aren't that strong, but who knows? But either way, it's a pretty hardcore death, so I'm not going to hate on it too much. But Tatum's KIA And then, as Jacqueline mentioned, we jump back as some other people are leaving. Stu is at the front door with Sydney, and Billy appears. And I think it does make sense that they have that kind of look. So it would make sense that Billy did it. It's just, I'm surprised that he or Stu let Billy do it. I feel like Stu would have wanted to do it.
Maybe he just didn't really care about Tatum, you know?
It could be. That makes sense. Billy and Sydney then go upstairs to Stu's parents' room to talk.
Yeah, go up to my parents' room.
To talk and stuff. Whatever. You know, whatever. I wonder what that means.
And this is when Randy comes back and he's like, oh, she's up there with Billy. I'll never have a chance with her. And then she's like, as if, oh, really, Alicia?
Yeah, Alicia. I love it. Fucking.
And then he goes reference. Like, whatever, with his hand.
They get a little quick scene with Gail and Kenneth. This is where we find out that there's a 30-second delay in the camera feed. But then we jump back up to the parents' bedroom where Billy and Sydney are just talking about, you know, life and... But it's not a movie. But according to Billy, yeah, it is. It's all one big, great movie. And as he strokes your cheek, he adds, only you can't pick your genre. Again, that would have tied into the scary movie title.
Mm-hmm.
But either way, then Sydney laments, you know, why can't I be in a Meg Ryan movie or even a good porno? And even Billy's like, what?
Well, she had that whole heart-to-heart with Tatum, and she's like, I'm sexually anorexic. I can't believe he stays with me. And she's like, are you dumb?
Yeah, exactly.
He's lucky to have you, which is true. It bums me out because I feel like she feels that she needs to do this, not necessarily that she wants to, you know?
Mm-hmm. Which I think ends up being kind of the point, because we all
like
in retrospect we all know that this is a huge mistake, but at the time she thought it was right. But yeah, so they get it on, and while they're doing the horizontal tango, we go downstairs back to the party, hey, where they're watching John Carpenter's Halloween Baby. And actually it's right at the moment,
your favorite kill,
it is Bob's about to get nailed to a fucking wall with a knife. We don't get to see it all, but that's the scene that's on. It's really good. Although this is one of my nitpick moments again, right? Then when they cut away, they show the audience reaction. One of the guys is like, the blood is all wrong. Why do they do that? It's too red. And I was like, wait, but there's not blood in that scene, if I recall.
You're right.
It's also dark. I don't know. It just seems like just a little, I don't know. I'm just being a nitpicker. If I'm wrong, if in the Bob murder scene, there's some really red blood, but it's dark in the kitchen, there's no lights. I thought it's mostly lit in shadow, or who knows. But this is where we get our line, because they start talking about, he says only virgins can outsmart the killer in the big chase scene at the end.
When don't do we know see her tits?
We don't see Jamie's tits till she went legit. I'm trying to remember that's exact.
Yeah.
We don't see her tits till she went legit. Is trading places in 83, I think is what he says. I just love Randy. Just like stupid little lines like that.
Jamie Kennedy is so legits. Fun.
He was perfect for this role. And it's amazing that he almost wasn't Randy. I forgot. It was between him and one other person. Oh, Breckenmeyer.
No idea who that is.
He was in Clueless. He's which guy he liked? Brittany Murphy's.
Oh, this guy.
With the longer.
It's like, I like draw Marvin the Martian.
Yeah, that fucker. The studio wanted him over Jamie Kennedy, but Wes Craven said Jamie Kennedy better embodied the role. Eventually, they fought around, but they ended up keeping Jamie Kennedy, which
thank God,
because he fucking fits this role to a T. Don't you know the rules? There's certain rules that one must abide by in order to successfully survive a horror movie. For instance, number one, you can never have sex. And everyone's like, ooh. Sex equals death. And then number two, you can never drink or do drugs. And everyone clinks their glasses together, obviously. Which that he says the sin factor. Extension of number one. And number three, never, ever, under any circumstances, say, I'll be right back. Because you won't be back. At which point, I think
and
even
then,
Stu says, "I'm getting another beer. You want one?" Randy, "Yes, yeah, sure. Let's do."
I'll be right back.
Yeah, that scene is so great. I think Jamie Kennedy's delivery, it is the whole vibe of that scene is what really sells it. There's a lot more like people interaction in that. And he's like, no, it's a sad fact. Like a lot more shouting stuff going on. I just love that scene, the rules. And the fact that the rules are calling out a lot of the tropes that we've kind of discussed in a lot of slasher movies. And the fact is this movie technically subverts them. Because I mean, the heroine is she not a virgin. She does
the dirty.
And she still outsmarts the killer. And Randy Deadly was drinking.
Two killers.
Correct. That's right. And then Deadly Randy was drinking and stuff, and he survived. But he was a virgin.
I never thought I'd be so happy to be a virgin.
That line is so good. This is why never thought I'd be so happy to be a virgin. We're jumping ahead of ourselves. My love is character.
I know, but it's just so fun to not talk about. It's too fun to not talk about him all at once.
It is. You know? Randy's just, he's one of my favorite characters.
His lines are too good. This is when he gets the phone call, right?
He's about to get the call about the principal. The only thing that happens between this scene and that is, do we get a call about a suspicious vehicle parked down the road? So he's like, okay, hey,
let's just take a walk over there. They do their little night.
They do their flirty, walky, cute thing. Some people leave the party. They ask about Tatum. Stu's like, oh, she probably got pissed at me and bailed. And then they're watching the movie. Randy gets the phone call comes in. Also, this isn't Randy's house. I like how he's just like, well, I'll go answer this phone.
He's a big old nerd. He's going to answer the phone, of course.
I never thought of it. Well, this is Stu's house.
The phone ringing is interrupting the movie. He has to get it out of the way. So he answers the phone and he's like, what? Essentially. And then he tells the fucking dude bros that the principal is hanging from the goalposts. And they're like, oh man, we better go before they...
Dead slaughtered hanging from the goalpost. Not just like chilling, they're having a good time.
RIP. And they're like, oh, we better go before they pull him down.
Yeah. The drunk dudes load up into their cars while like humming fucking Flight of the Valkyries or Ride of the Valkyries. They're fucking peeling out.
I think this is when we get the little reminder that there is a 30-second delay, because we're like, I think we see in the van or something shortly with Randy, because we see him, we're watching on the screen, but the guys are running out. The guys are running out before we see it on the screen.
That's exactly correct. Kenneth is chilling out in the van and eating his chips. He notices them all charging out and swerving in their cars. And then he looks over to the screen where they're still chilling, and he gets the like front up view of Jamie Kent or Randy. He's like, hello. And so we realize it's another reminder. The timer is off. But as they speed off, you know, going cray cray, it's perfect time to Dewey and Gail, who are having the little cutesy walk, but they nearly get run down by the drunken dude bros. They have to jump off the road to avoid being roadkill. And after a little smoochy smooch, Gail spots a car in the brush, and Dewey says, it's Neil Prescott's car. It's Sydney's father.
Dun, dun, dun.
They got peace back. I don't think that's a phrase, peace back, but we're going to, it's peace out, but I want peace back. Like, I'm coming back peacefully. So I'm going to say I'm peacing back.
Okay.
Let's make it catch on. That's not going to happen.
So we go back to the room.
Oh yeah, we go back to the post-coital.
Post-coital?
Yeah.
They're buttoning shirts, they're tying up shoes.
Also, I like how she's on sitting on the bed, which is like comfortable. Mm-hmm. He's on the floor, leaned up against the wall. Like, you're not posing for like a catalog, dude. Get the fuck on the like, be comfortable.
Yeah, but then he wouldn't be like facing her. It's a very small bed.
You could sit next to there's another wall that I don't know.
Anyway, she's like, who was your call? He's like, what do you mean? Your call, you know, you get one call. He's like, when it was my dad. And she's like, no. You said call my father.
She's like, the sheriff called your father. I saw him. Yeah, but when I called, I didn't get an answer. I think this line's great because technically she's right and wrong at the same time. She's mm-hmm. right in that she's like, that would be really smart and suspicious, like if you were that, which he is yeah. one of the killers. But she's wrong because technically he didn't make that call because yep. there's more than one killer. But mm-hmm. at this point, if you've never seen it, you don't know that. So it's a real nice, mm-hmm. it's another way to make you think, wait, was it him? And then they yeah. immediately subvert it. So you think, because it's after that, he's like, you still think it's me? What do I have to do to make you believe I'm not a killer?
Well, there's one way.
Yep. Getting stabbed. Because
by the killer.
Up. Yeah. The killer walks in and she's like, look out. And he turns around. He gets stabbed. You know, she just sees it from the backside.
But his shirt has no holes.
Listen, but it has a lot of dark red colors. It's got the mm-hmm. right color.
Corn syrup.
Same thing they use for pig's blood and carry. That's what he says.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But either way.
But oh man.
So he goes down. He's like
stabby stab. And then Ghostface looks at Sydney while yeah, Billy's on the ground. And then he takes the knife, holds it up, takes his other hand, and like wipes off all of the blood. And you hear the like little squeak from him cleaning off the blood.
That's a recurring thing in this series. Like Ghostface always seems to wipe the blood off of the knife. Yeah, it happens a lot in future.
How kind, ones,
I believe.
You know?
I don't know.
Doesn't want to pass along the germs.
Yeah, because that's, you know, when you wipe a blade clean, all the germs are gone.
Yeah, you wipe the blade off with the clothes you've been wearing.
This message brought to you by COVID-19 Omicron variant. Just wipe it with dirty cloth. Yeah. It'll be fine. Yeah.
It's all you need. Be all right. It's good for the immune system. Put some hair on your chest. Builds character. You know, all those phrases.
But either way, so Billy just got ganked. You know, gets to turn around and he gets to look longingly at Sydney and hold out his hand dramatically before falling dead on the thing. And as Jacqueline said, the ghost face wipes the blade. And so starts our chase scene where Sydney manages to like juke him. She hits him with the door, mm-hmm. barricades him. She uses like a surfboard because they got money and stuff. And mm-hmm. the barricade herself in the attic, crawls out the freaking attic window, but she does take a tumble because the killer mm-hmm. tries to grab at her. She falls off the roof and onto a tarp boat that apparently is really soft. She rolls off, but oh no, the killer's gone. But like in any Final Girl circuit, she's by the garage and she sees Tatum.
Oh, and then she looks like she's about to puke.
Well, yeah, it's like your friend. Well, Tatum looks like
yeah. up. No, she looks rough.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's so crazy to like see this and just like, oh, now she has to keep going. That's fucking rough. But she does. She runs. Is this where when?
Well, first the killer
when they force tension
with the sneak to Randy.
Yeah.
Yes. I don't like the way you say force tension because I like this scene and that may
no,
be.
I love this scene. Okay. I love this scene. I
was
think
like,
it's great,
I don't want to take
but this but they're
personally,
doing that thing.
But I'm taking it personally. Yes, it is.
But they're doing that thing. We're like,
tell me about
the
thing.
We're so ready. We're so ready. We're here. We're in the chase scene. But just kidding. Hold on. Hold that thought. Put a pin in it. We gotta make time for jokes. Watch out, Jamie, says Jamie Kennedy. And it's and
oh
he's
my
not
God.
Listening.
Oh my God. So I obviously when he says watch out, Jamie, I'm like, right, Jamie Lee Curtis. He's watching Halloween. Mm-hmm. She's the main character. It never occurred to me that he's also Jamie Kennedy. And you do see his angles. Reflection because they show the
you
movie.
Do.
So even as he's like, you see Jamie Lee Curtis on screen, you also see Jamie Kennedy's reflection. He's like, mm-hmm. look out, Jamie, behind you. And literally behind him is Ghostface rolling up with a knife. Look out, Jamie, behind you. He's so drunk. Behind you, Jamie. Oh, no, not Jamie.
He's doing that thing that, you know, we all do.
Exactly. You know? Oh, I'm totally that guy.
And
like, bitch,
oh yeah.
There's a fucking door of it.
Don't do it.
Yeah, don't I'm like, go oh, there. Nope, you're gonna that. Nope, okay, you're dead. Like, yeah, or like in Black yeah. Christmas when they're like, by the way, I'm not gonna be here when you come back. I'm like, oh, you're well, dead now.
Death sentence.
Yeah,
dead.
Ghostface sneaking up on him, but Sid scream.
It would still be Stu at this point.
Yeah, it would still be Stu because he went downstairs.
Yeah, because Billy still doesn't still have...
pretending yeah. to be. Or Billy is totally dead. He's still dead.
Totally dead.
And yeah, he almost killed Randy, but thankfully he took a long time. And we hear Sid mm-hmm. screams outside, so he gets distracted. We cut back to the van, and Sid hops in with Kenneth, and she's like, "Oh, the killer's inside." And that's when they watch the screen, and we're, the 30-second delay, we're watching the killer slowly creeping up on mm-hmm. on Randy. And so Kenneth, rest in peace. He gets out of the van. They'll try and save our boy. And that's when he sees the door open and realizes 30-second delay. And I think that might be like his final words, because I'm pretty sure I know he gets his throat slit, but I think he mentions that it's a lot of blood. And Sydney's like, fuck, crawls out the back of the van. We're again in the chase.
But like, oh, very small little hole that she's crawling through.
Yeah.
Very much like the one that Tatum was trying to crawl through. So you're
my
just
ass
like,
would have been dead. I'd oh, be yeah. like, well, I'm this out. Is it. Peace out. We cut back to Dewey and Gail, who arrived at the front of the house. And he's like, Gail, go lock yourself in the van. Go call the sheriff. I'm going inside. Gail goes back to the van. And she's like, yo, where's my camera, dude? It's empty. But then she realizes the fucking huge pool of blood, which I'm sorry. How did she not see that? You have peripheral vision. I assume
yeah.
she does. But it was all over the ground. And on the van. So she's like, okay, fuck. Hops in the van, shuts the door, hops in the front, and she's calling the cops when Randy appears and he scares her. So she bashes him in the face with a phone. And that's how we avoid a phone call to the cops, because she's halfway through. And he's like, bump, bump, bump. And then she tries to drive, but then the windshield's like all covered in something.
What could it be?
I don't know. It's blood.
Kenny, I'm sorry, but get off my fucking windshield.
Exactly. As it turns out, they had time after they killed Kenneth to lift his ass up there and let him bleed out over the windshield.
How is Michael Myers out here doing this kind of setup by himself? These two guys, I'm still impressed that they're able to do it.
Well, this one would have just been Stu.
Impossible.
No, because Billy would have had to fucking sneak outside the house looking all bloody. I think this is one of those times where the magic of Hollywood, or because plot, and then she starts driving and yep, Kenny's body starts falling over the windshield. We get Gail's wonderful, charming line. She spins the van in a circle to try and get his body to tumble off, which works. But then Sydney runs out in the road, like, stop, help. And Gail's like, oh, fuck. She swerves to avoid her, and she drives that van straight into a tree.
And then Sid runs into the cop car and she locks the door.
But before she does, it's because she sees Dewey. Oh, Dewey at the front door. And then he stumbles over and the knife's in his back. And then she hides in his cop car.
Oh, boy. So good. She's in there. She's using the radio, right, to call in. She's like, I'm at Stu's house and this. He's going to kill me. And she's like, push down the locks, but he must be like underneath the car pushing that shit back up. I don't know how that works.
He had the keys. He's oh, did he? Just because he killed he stabbed Dewey.
Oh, so he took his keys.
He took his keys because she literally gets in there and tries to start the car.
And then that's
keys
when
keys aren't in ignition. He taps on the window with the knife. And when mm-hmm. she looks up, he dangles the keys in front. He fucking taunts her. He goes,
yes.
And that's why when she starts locking, he ducks down and he starts unlocking like individual doors. But you see when she gets on the radio that the back hatch is slowly being raised silently.
So quietly.
Yeah, I was like, that's the most quiet hatch ever. I'm like, every SUV I've ever owned, like you at least hear like a click or like a like the I don't know what that noise is.
Something. You're telling me I hear the squeak of a clean blade, but not the back door of his car opening? Good feature. It's like your kitchen drawers that have the no slam.
Yeah. They were living in the future in 96. She has to bail and run toward the house. And she grabs Dewey's gun. And again, like, fucking props to her. That's good. And that's when Randy and Stu arrive. Randy arrives and then Stu. And they're both like, yo, help me. It's him. It's the other one.
And they're both, like, pointing. Like, it's him. Yeah. It's him. Yeah. Like, no, it's him. And, like, for once, Stu doesn't seem like a dick. He doesn't seem like he has an attitude right now. He's like serious, like he's trying real hard to get her to believe him.
Yeah, because he needs her to.
Well, both. Yeah,
yeah.
And she goes, fuck you both.
I love it. I was,
and
I
slammed the same door thing on him,
like, I'm sorry Randy, you're my boy, but in terms of, like,
gotta be better than moves, this, you gotta, yes, think for yourself.
In terms of final girl moves, I was like, yes Sydney, when they're both like, which one of us gonna just give me a good, I'm like, nah, fuck that. It's like, I'm just not gonna have to make the decision. Yeah. You guys deal with it out there, sorry. But she locks them out, and oh my god, Billy, he's still alive, because he stumbles out of the bedroom and he fucking rolls his bitch ass down the stairs. Like, I'm sorry, even if you, that would hurt. I would think, you know,
like, it's hurting you in this situation. There's no way that's helping.
I mean, I guess he's really
helping your case, it. I guess, but yeah,
he's,
like,
selling it. But he rolls his bitch ass down the stairs and then he's like, here, just give me the gun and I'll open the door. She's like, no. He's like, it's okay. I got stabbed like 50 times, but I've got this. He doesn't say that, but, like, think about it. Motherfucker got stabbed like 4 times. Yeah. Also, he looks like he's a skewered pig. Like, it's fucking it's bread, mm-hmm, all over the goddamn place. But he opens the door and Randy gets in. And then they lock the door. Randy's like, Stu flipped out. He's gone mad.
We all go a little mad sometimes, which is
Anthony Perkins, psycho. Mm-hmm. He literally says it like 2 seconds later, but he pops Randy in the shoulder.
But, like, thank fucking god,
like, that we finally
know he gets him in the shoulder.
I was actually gonna say, thank god we finally knew who one of the fucking killers is, but yeah,
I mean,
well, he's too. Getting shot in the cold, the colder, colder's getting shot in the shoulder can still kill you though. But yeah, it could have been far worse, although it launches Randy back for some reason. Mm-hmm. Like, oh. And he goes down. It didn't, like, knock him unconscious, but
no.
In Scream World, he's unconscious because now he's just silent for a while. And then Stu appears and she's like sitting. He's like, oh God, it's Billy, he's crazy. And Stu pulls out the voice changer and it's revealed that they were a team, which was still pretty, that was hardcore.
It's so good.
It really is. I mean, we've been, I was going to say dropping hints, but.
Yeah,
I'm dropping fucking
baguettes,
you know, entire baguettes, not bread. Stu and Billy, shocker.
Great partnership. And then is this when Stu says, what's wrong, Sid? You look like you've seen a ghost.
Yep. And then they reveal that they framed Cotton Weary so that they murdered her mom. It's like, oh, shit.
Because her mom was a whore. I say that because that's what he said.
I think they use even worse words. Yeah. They go off on a whole tangent. Like,
yeah, your mom's a slut bag.
No Sharon Stone. Because like, she was spreading her slut bag thing all over town like she was Sharon Stone. She ain't no Sharon Stone. Fucking all crazy. Well, technically, Stu had no motive. His was peer
he's
pressure.
He's in it for the fun.
Yeah, he's just crazy.
That's his boy. Like, there's like a lot of things that people say that, like, he's in love with Billy.
I don't know. It didn't seem that way. It just didn't seem like he was giving.
He just seems a little unhinged.
Yeah, because even then, when they start stabbing each other, in a little bit, spoiler, but it's part of their plan. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't seem like, oh, my lover betrayed me. It's more just like, you bring a dick, dude. So here, let me do a prank to you. I don't know. So it didn't seem like that kind of love to me. As it turns out, Billy had a very strong motive. It also seems like he hadn't told Stu, because when he reveals that, Stu looks surprised.
I think he knew maybe a little bit, but I don't think he knew everything. Because, okay. Well, he had to have known that it was the mom was actually cheating on.
Yeah,
he knew that the mom and Cotton were a thing, but maybe not that the mom and Billy's
That's what I mean. I think that part is what threw him off. Because at first,
because that's the reason why the mom left.
Sydney's mother slept with Billy's father. Billy was like, abandonment causes serious deviant behavior.
But he also says, like, horror movies don't make serial killers. It just makes them more creative.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Yep. That's what he says, pretty much.
Yeah.
What? You don't like that line? I like that
line. No, I like it. Well, I like the fact that they're not trying to like blame scary movies for this. Just
I
like
think that's why I kind of like,
because in like in the 90s, you know, it was like violent video games. Like, oh no, we gotta blame violent video games, or like school shootings. Oh, they were listening to Marilyn Manson. Mm-hmm. Not the fact that the kids were like, you know, terrible people. Nazis. Columbine kids were Nazis, but no one wants to talk about that. They just want to be like, oh, Marilyn Manson, they were playing Grand Theft Auto, you know, like, yeah, I remember watching like 2020 as a kid, and they were just like always trying to blame that kind of shit, or like blaming rap music. They always want an easy out. So it was nice to see that, like, them poking fun at that idea. It's not what made us this way. It's like they're just helping us out.
Because it's, again, it's not the cause. Like, and that's what a lot of people were trying to say, was that they were like causing it. And like, I don't know about that, homie. But after that big bombs dropped, Billy mentions it's actually, it's not the, she's like, it was like almost a year anniversary. He's like, actually, check the time. It's 1 year, baby. It's the anniversary of your mother's death. So they have a surprise. Steve pulls out her dad. It's Neil Prescott.
Doesn't he say, oh, wait for this, Sid. It's going to be a real scream.
He does. Because I want to be like, oh, roll credits. We got the name. But they also say scary movie a lot. So, you know, they revealed that, you know, they kidnapped Sydney's father. They dropped the voice changer in his pocket, revealed they cloned his cell phone, proven Dewey right. It's nice. It's like a throwaway line. They barely mention it. But I was like, Dewey, you son of a bitch. You beautiful son of a bitch.
And earlier, we see, like, way earlier when Dewey has the costume, like the bag costume, it says like father of death. So that's like not a them red herring to us. It's the filmmakers red herring to us. But yeah, they were trying hard to make us think. I never thought he was the killer.
Neither did I. There wasn't enough of him either. Otherwise, it'd be like, okay, it was him after we saw him for like 5 minutes.
I guess you could think it like retaliation on his cheating wife and stuff. I just didn't buy it. I think it's because we didn't have enough time with him. Maybe if we would have had actual time with him to like see him be a weirdo a little bit more, maybe I could have bought it.
We'd need some more set off. Otherwise, there would have been no payoff. It would have just felt hollow. They'd say that they're going to kill him, frame him, make it look like he killed everyone. And then they also
need... we'll be the survivor.
They need to be left for dead as part of their plan.
Come on, bring it.
Yeah, so they stab each other here. They take turns stabbing each other. Remember, go for the side, not too deep. I don't know, I've never been stabbed that way, but man, it doesn't sound fun. And they don't make it seem fun either, because it's like, oh
no.
Oh, and there's just like, it's like, you went too deep. Exactly. It's like, and they start bleeding a lot, like especially Stu,
that sweater.
I was gonna say that sweater, it started as,
it's
like
real
that
red,
off-white ish and then it becomes this dark red, like, oh my god, he looks awful. But he's also bleeding from his mouth. It gets hardcore. But yeah, they trade wounds, hurting each other a bit. It's pretty gnarly. And Gail appears in the door with the gun. Turns out that
she was dead.
Well, she looked dead. Still does. I believe it's
still just fucking roasting her.
Yeah,
ass.
Exactly. I was like, it's fucking fantastic. But yeah, she's, you know, reveals like, I got my plan. You know, this is my ending. But Billy manages to knock her out because it turned out she had the safety on. He pushes in where she backs up, falls, and like conveniently knocks herself out again. She at least tried to pull the trigger twice. You could tell like from her hand gestures, props to her for trying to put the big boy down. And then he's about to actually shoot her. And he makes like some nice little line about like, this is Gail Weathers signing off. When Stu's like, you're going to love this baby, he turns around and realizes Sydney and your dad are gone. Because they totally did not, they forgot to look at her. I think that part's earned, because I actually in that moment forgot about them too. They knocked out the threat and then doop. And then when the phone rings and then it's Sydney fucking with them, doesn't she ask them if they want to play a game? And it's like, guess who called the police and reported your sorry motherfucking asses or something like that.
Sid, did you really call the cops?
Yeah, you bet your sorry your ass. They did. Yep. My mom and dad are
my mom and dad and me.
It's so good.
And that wasn't Billy's in the script. Props to Matthew Lillard. So good.
It really is. That line specifically.
No matter how silly he is, still cares what mommy and daddy think. Oh, Stu. Billy's got a motive. The police are on their way. What are you going to tell them? Peer pressure. I'm far too sensitive. We'll rip you up, you bitch, just like your fucking mother. You gotta find me first, you pansy-ass mama's boy. Doesn't she say something else?
That's when Billy
takes
the phone. That's what she calls him, a mama's boy.
Do we ever find out why Hannibal Lecter liked to eat people? Don't think so. See, it's a lot more scarier when there's no motive.
But that's when Billy then reveals.
Do you hear that, Stu? I think she wants a motive. Well, I don't really believe in motive, Sid. I mean, did Norman Bates have a motive? No.
And it turns out Billy does have motive, but Stu didn't. But yeah, Billy goes looking for her. She pops out of the closet wearing the fucking costume and stabs him with an umbrella, which, I mean, actually, that would hurt. But while Billy's out for a little bit, she and Stu end up tussling in the TV room. She bites him, hits him with the potted plant, and drops a freaking CRTV on his face. It shorts out and smokes. After his body starts writhing. Rest in peace.
Or?
As far as we know.
Maybe not.
Supposedly in Scream 5. That's right. We're talking like 4 movies.
He's in Scream 2 in the background at one of the frat parties.
Stu is?
Yeah, Matthew Lillard.
I never noticed that.
And then I know we're not talking sequels, but I fucking love Matthew Lillard and I can't help it. But yeah, he's in the background in one of the, like, a party scene. It's like blonde hair era Lillard. And he was supposed to have like a really big role in the sequels and then they ditched it.
Okay.
I think that may have been a consequence of Columbine.
Oh, okay.
I think, as a lot of things ended up being, a lot of movies ended up changing because of Columbine and like 9/11.
Oh yeah.
But Matthew Lillard, like, he's so precious. Him and Skeet, they like go to conventions together and they do like panels. They're so fucking cute. They talk about the movies and all the time he's always asked, so what do you think? And he's like, well, man, I'd love to be in it. You know, he's so sweet and he loves the series. I can't imagine being an actor and getting killed off so early, like in a long franchise.
It was almost chance that he was cast. I believe he was with his girlfriend at the time auditioning for something else, and the casting director, someone from Scream, saw him there and asked him if he would audition for Stu. So he did. Apparently he killed it and he got the role. So he didn't like pick this one out. It was pure chance. Found that out while I was looking up stuff about Scream prepping for this. I was like, no way.
So fun fact, Skeet thought Scream was a very serious documentary about two killers before filming.
Did they give him a script?
I don't know.
He's like, wow, these kids were witty. Look at this sharp dialogue.
Scream sequels made Wes Craven miserable. And that's what Matthew Lillard said. Wouldn't go that far.
He did pass away, though.
And then he did. Oh, you motherfucker. So apparently in an interview, he said they joked, like, we're the leads of it. Didn't they tell you? Lillard chimed in. Wait till the trailer drops. You're going to see our faces. You can print this, please. I'm available and ready for Scream 6. Or 7 or 9 or 15. And that's funny because it's like, well, yeah, you see their face because you see Ghostface. Someone said, I don't know who tweeted it or like where it came from, but it's like, oh, the killer is in this poster, is on the poster. And it's like, yeah, because Ghostface is also the poster. Also, I'm sick. Never mind. I'm not going to go there. But when I was leaving Spider-Man yesterday, I was walking out and what was there? The gigantic Scream poster, like the big one, like the cardboard. And I was so excited. And the tagline on there is like, it's always someone you know or something like that. Yeah, the internet doesn't think Matthew Lillard died in Scream, and he agrees. Like, I've seen him talk. Oh, it couldn't be that bad. Like, I could survive that. Just a TV, you know? Like, it's just cute. A
TV, one of those 1996 big ass
TVs,
CRTVs. For those of you that never had to deal with this, if you're on the younger side of all, if you've been dealing with LCDs and LEDs, you have lived a blessed life. I thankfully did not have to live with CRTVs for long. But let me tell you, one of that size would be far heavier than they look. Usually you're like, oh, that's not bad. And then you lift it up and you're like, oh God, what did they put in these fucking things? But yeah, those motherfuckers were heavy. So I think dropping one in the head, real talk, would probably kill you. But I am so down for him to come back, and I know there's rumors that he might, and I'm hopeful. But as I'm saying, in terms of Scream 1, I'm considering him RIP'd. There's like some shorting out, and then there's some smoke. This is when she runs back to check on, I think, her dad or someone, but Randy pops out, and this is where he gets his, she's like, I thought you were dead. And he said, I probably should be. I never thought I'd be so happy to be a virgin.
Stay true to the rules.
See, and then he gets punched in the face by Billy, who's fucking back, and he tries
to stay dead, damn it.
No, he won't. He refuses, and he tries to stab Sid. In this scuffle, she digs a finger into his open wound. He's about to stab her, and bam, gunshot. It's Gail Weathers from the doorway.
Won't forget about the safety this time.
You bastard. And that's when, as they look at him, Randy warns them, this is the moment where the supposedly dead killer comes back to life for one last scare. And then what happens, Jacqueline?
Not in my movie. Bam! Right in the forehead.
He pops up.
He does. Yeah. He pops up with a lot of vigor, you know.
Yeah. Just reaches and then she shoots him in the head. I love that. Not in my movie. Again, with the scary movie and the movie theme, I know, beating a dead horse. But it's my horse, and I'll beat it as much as I want because it's dead now. And it's a horse. That's not a thing, right? Beating a dead horse. Get one. You're giving me a look. I don't like this look. Yeah, you're judging me.
I don't know.
They free Sid's father. Cops arrive. You get the nice little shot of Dewey getting loaded into the ambulance. Gail's giving her report, or at least, you know, one
follow me. Of it.
And the camera rises up, pans toward the sky.
I'm here, reporting live from this developing story. And I'm like, she has her on switch. It's flicked on. She's ready to roll. I love it.
And then, boom, it's over.
Roll credits.
I love that movie so much. And I don't want to gush over it too much. I've already said I'm a fanboy.
That's fine.
It's just, man, I think it really influenced me just in a lot of ways, just because horror comedy is one of my favorite genres, just not only in movies, but books. Yeah, and this one just has both, I feel, in a very good measure.
I looked up two reviews from 1996. One is an article from Variety. They do not care for this movie. They said that, loosely quote, Scream is an interesting stab at altering the shape of horror, but it's one experiment that needed more time in the lab. They did say that, like, it's Craven, he's in familiar territory, but he's kind of poking fun and being a little winky to the audience, and they didn't really like that. They thought it was a little too much, and I'm like, that's the whole point.
It ended up spurring like a wave of movies similar to it. So despite their critical reception, or is that at least their critical reception, popular reception proved different.
Its attempts to instill irony and social perspective just slow down the proceedings. But on the other hand, on the Roger and Ebert site, I love that I can still get their fucking reviews from the 90s. Mm-hmm. Scream, they gave it 3 stars, which I think for a genre film coming from them, pretty solid rating.
For a genre film. Wow. No, I know what you're saying.
You know,
I know the critical opinions.
They say a lot of good. It's so funny though, because they talk about like, oh, it's in jokes and it's self-aware.
Yeah.
And
that's what I love about it.
At the same time, I was aware of the incredible level of gore in this film, which, like, there's those points where Drew Barrymore's guts are hanging out of her, and we hear about gory things that are happening, but it's not all real.
fucking, even in the end scene, then they're stabbing each other and it's all over fucking, and we know it's not real, but it's the implication, you know, it's designed to look real. I'm not saying I agree with that perspective.
The way that this review ends is the violence diffused by the ironic way the film uses it and comments on it? For me, it was. For some viewers, it will not be, and they will be horrified. Which category do you fall in? Here's an easy test. When I mentioned Fangoria, did you know what I was talking about? I just thought that was funny.
Empire has it on their list of 50 best horror movies. It's number 3.
Definitely. But like, when was that list published? I mean, that's like a modern look at it. Like,
yeah. Oh, this sorry. Is one that's of right.
the best modern, like our era movies. But for someone older, I think that grew up with a different version of horror movies, the horror movies that these are, that this is making fun of.
Yeah.
Or poking holes in a little bit. It's different. And I think the self-aware aspect is something that's weird for people. It's not like, I don't think it goes too far.
Yeah.
I don't think it goes too far. It's not like it's breaking the fourth wall.
Exactly. It's just the characters in it, some of them are knowledgeable of horror movies and can call out the tropes.
I like that we've seen the same movies.
Yeah. Like, I like that too. I'm like, okay, so this is a character that isn't just like, I've never seen a horror movie and I'm in a horror movie. I'm going to do something stupid.
I'm in a world that horror movies don't exist in.
Yeah, I get people like, don't let, not everyone likes them, which is fair. But when you have
can you some that really pretend they don't. Them?
Yeah.
Especially like teens. Like that's what you do. You watch horror movies.
Yes, all you teens out there watching horror. You're watching your darn fangled horror movies.
I remember like looking on demand. And like sneak in to watch like Hostel and The Exorcism of Emily Rose. And then when I was way younger, like renting this like Sicko, this like clown serial killer movie. Or no, it was Sick. Serial Insane Clown Killer was what it's, you know, like staying up late and watching like Chucky and things like that. Or Nightmare on Elm Street on the weekends when I didn't have cable. Or like the weekends when I would like get pawned off on my grandma and like steal her copy of Halloween on VHS and like watch that while no one was around just in case I'd get in trouble. Watching a horror movie is one of the first like air quote bad things you can do to like be rebellious or like get your hands on easily.
True. I never thought of it that way.
Because it's like age restricted or like sneaking into a horror movie. It's cool that we're all on the same page.
So Scream, how many jack-o'-lanterns, Jacqueline?
10. Love it. Nice. It's my favorite.
I'm giving it 9.5, not to be
rebellious. Oh, you son of a bitch.
No, I just because I also said it's one of my favorites. It's far, not just horror movies, just in general.
Yeah, I watch it all the time. So I put it on. I like it.
I feel like 9.5 is still, it is rare to get in my mind. Yeah. 10 out of 10. This is really hard to get. I don't know. I love the shit out of this movie. Love it so much. But I was like, I don't know. Can I give it a 10? I feel like it'd have to be close to flawless. I don't know. Now you're going to make me think way too much about this. But I'm sticking with my 9.5 because that's still fine. Damn good. I know.
Honestly, should take off half a point just because Matthew Lillard is dead.
Maybe.
Dead in the series. Maybe. Like, yeah, there's some things that I could like poke a hole in story-wise or things that I wasn't like super fond of, but I think that stuff's good for me. You know what I mean? No, like, I think it's good that I can't see everything or they didn't do everything exactly the way I would want because plot. I was talking about Spider-Man earlier with one of my coworkers, and I'm not going to spoil anything.
Good.
But I was saying, like, I'm so mad that this happened. Like, I hated it. It's not what I would have done. Why did they have to do this? And it's like, well, because X, Y, Z.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, of course they have to do that because of that. And doesn't make me okay with it. I don't know. I like this. And I think even though I've never heard of a sequel for it, like, the sequels are really good. I like 2 and I like 3 enough anyway. I know a lot of people seem to not like it, but
I still enjoy them both.
I don't watch them as much.
I mean, I'm 4. It's like, I shouldn't disregard 4.
It's 4 is fine.
Yeah, it is. It doesn't have the same quite feeling as the original three for me.
It doesn't have the same exact vibe. Also, I think I just prefer the movies that are set in the 90s.
That makes sense with that. That gives us like that nostalgia kind of.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it gives us nostalgia.
Yeah, it hits that just enough. And I just can't believe that we're getting another one.
Yep.
I'm so scared that it's not going to be good.
I just have no expectations. If it's enjoyable as a movie, like, you know, we'll see. See what they got. I have faith. And if not, then we'll just say, you know, hey, that gives us more to talk about. If it's not good.
Those are the easy conversations to have.
That's true.
But anything else? Anything to say before we go?
No, I think just, you know, remember the rules. No sex, no drugs. Never tell anyone you'll be right back. Always say, I'm never coming back. Mm-hmm. Be safe out there.
Gotta say bye forever.
Yep, every time. Mm-hmm. That definitely won't get you killed in a horror movie. No. Bye forever. As look at my send-off now. Bye forever, everybody.
Bye forever.